had gave us had a sort of standing order in place, a standing permission that if patrons of the Brasserie restaurant in Kidderminster left a pittance in the tip tray, like shrapnel, loose change, we were actually allowed to follow them out of the restaurant and say, excuse me, sir, I think you forgot your bus fare. But the restaurant went from strength to strength. We may return our attention to that issue a little later in the programme, because it is enduringly fascinating, but not perhaps as fascinating as the King's imminent visit to Washington, D.C., site at the weekend, of course, of a shooting, the details of which will no doubt continue to emerge in the course of the day. What's the best that can happen, and what's the worst?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump says the King will be very safe during his state visit to the US. Security talks between the White House and Buckingham Palace are ongoing after a gunman targeted an event the president attended on Saturday. Washington bureau chief at The Guardian, David Smith, attended the dinner. He told LBC the situation was quickly brought under control.
I think the administration is arguing, well, the system did work, and even if he had broken through those personnel, there were further Secret Service people guarding the doors to the ballroom itself. You know, he didn't have Donald Trump in his sights or anything like that, no. but even so, it's closer than many would like.
Charles and Camilla are due to arrive in Washington this evening, where they'll be welcomed with a garden party. LBC understands most of their trip will go ahead as planned, with a few minor adjustments. It's being reported that the US has received a new Iranian peace proposal through Pakistani mediators. It's understood the plan includes a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, but nuclear negotiations would be postponed. Sir Richard Dalton, a former British ambassador to Iran, isn't convinced the US will agree to it.
The Iranians wish to retain a theoretical right to enrich uranium. They're determined to retain some control of the Straits of Hormuz, and they're not going to give up their relationships with their regional allies. Meanwhile, the United States wants the exact opposite.
A 26th arrest has been made by police investigating a series of attacks on Jewish sites in London. A 37-year-old man has been detained in Barnstable in Devon. Counter-terror teams are investigating a string of attacks over the past month. We're going to hear from the Prime Minister shortly about his plans to tackle shop theft. Sir Keir Starmer says he wants to put an end to what he calls a shoplifting free-for-all. And 2 in 3 primary school children say they would like to spend more time learning languages. Research from the British Council found nearly 70% also said they'd keep studying it as they grow older. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 14 points at 10,370. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a cloudy start to the in the south of England with some sunny spells, scattered showers in the northeast with a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I hope you had a splendid weekend and took full advantage of the weather if you're listening in most parts of the UK. It was absolutely glorious, wasn't it? Nothing glorious about events in Washington DC, however, over the course of yesterday. I mean, a very stark reminder in some ways that though so many elements of the administration are profoundly abnormal, you have to, and we've wrestled with this so much together, or at least I've wrestled with it and you've sort of watched and laughed, you have to treat it normally. When something happens to the President of the United States, it gets treated regardless of who is the incumbent, and quite rightly. This is the thing you struggle with. And that is why the level of coverage is extraordinary on both sides of the Atlantic, perhaps a little bit more surprising on this side. But don't be surprised by it, because not only is it huge, potentially, albeit that nobody happily was badly hurt. I think a Secret Service agent was shot at, but his bulletproof vest did what it was designed to do, and the shooter, of course, got nowhere near the room where it happens. But it is obviously a very big deal, whoever the president is, even when it's a president who celebrates the death of great American public servants like Robert Mueller, who literally announces how delighted he is when somebody is when somebody dies. You don't change your moral code according to the identity of things to whom bad things are happening. Otherwise, of course, you become as bad as them. I was surprised to discover while I was reading into the events of yesterday, or sort of Saturday night, our time, isn't it? I was surprised to discover how far and how deep the belief that the last assassination attempt on Donald Trump was a fake had travelled, including among his own base, among people that were very, very, very much on board and pro-Trump for the for the second term, the second presidential campaign. Well, I suppose the third presidential campaign, technically, but the second one that he won. That struck me as bitterly ironic, that they have created an ecosystem in which the truth has been completely denuded and conspiracy theories have been afforded ludicrous levels of plausibility. And now, of course, they become, if you like, hoist by their own conspiracy theory petards. People who I would have possibly argued should know better, or would once have known better, buying into conspiracy theories this weekend about false flags and staged events and the extraordinary coincidence. The Washington Post reports that the security detail was not on the highest alert that it could have been. Some people see 2 + 2 and conclude that the result must be 7. But it's their own fault. They've created this world in which the truth has been completely denuded and conspiracy theories have been treated as if they were the truth. And I suppose I shouldn't have been that surprised to discover that it now, of course, extends even into events at which they are at the heart. It's worth looking into if you're interested in such things. But I don't think it would be appropriate to talk about that today. For a start, I mean, like we always do with conspiracy theories, we worry that by even discussing them, mocking them, laughing at them, pointing them out, you give some sort of oxygen to them, which prolongs their life and perhaps inflates their significance. And the other reason why this event garners so much attention on this side of the Atlantic is because the king of these islands is due to arrive in Washington, D.C. today. He is going today for this state visit, a state visit that I think is probably ill-advised, but which changes its complexion completely in the wake of these events. Because now you sort of think, well, he has to go. You can't let fear or concern about the actions of dangerous or crazy people change the behavior of the main players, of the main protagonists. You can't live in fear, albeit that Donald Trump has used this opportunity to start punting for his weird ballroom almost before the dust had settled on the events, that the army of online supporters was turning it into a supposed proof that he really needs his hideous ballroom. I don't quite understand that, but there's lots of things I don't quite understand. We'll focus today on things that I do understand. Buckingham Palace said in a statement that after much discussion, the King's visit to Washington would go ahead as planned. I don't think that this element of the conversation changes. I don't think the phone-in we had about whether or not the king should go changes at all as a consequence. I don't think there's another interesting phone-in to be had. I could be wrong, and I mean, in a way, you're welcome to prove to me by making a fascinating and interesting call in answer to the question of whether or not these events should have changed the plan. But I don't know that the events of this weekend, albeit that they raise questions about the security of top officials in Donald Trump's regime, I don't know that the question we have asked each other recently about the wisdom of this trip changes, because it was a diplomatic wisdom we were looking at. It was the question of whether or not normalizing or treating with respect or essentially, you know, facilitating a president who is so profoundly opposed not only to our interests, but to the interests of peace, freedom, the West, whatever you want to call it, whether or not exposing the king to that sort of activity would be unseemly or inappropriate. And I haven't really changed my answer to that question either, which is I can't really see how, well, that's what we're going to do today. The king is going to visit Donald Trump, a man whose depravities are legion. That isn't an opinion, that is counting. A man who remains at the heart of all manner of suspicions and allegations contained within the Epstein files, which, of course, he promised to release and still hasn't. He is a character who thinks nothing of insulting allies and praising enemies. He's never done anything that would disappoint Vladimir Putin, and he's hardly ever done anything that would delight allies, up to and including at the end of last week, lest you forget, I mean, once again, treading on territory that would once have been unthinkable. The Falkland Islands. Another theatre in which British service personnel gave their lives for Queen and country. And another event in our history that Donald Trump has sought to denigrate, insult and malign. I don't know that he's done anything that's made me angrier than the insult to the Afghan mission. When he said we hadn't done anything or we'd stayed away from the front line, and you thought of the hundreds of British servicemen and women who died in that activity as a direct result of answering the USA's call for help, and to insult them in their memory of all the things he's done that we know for a fact that he's done, the things that are not still in the realms of suspicion or allegation, but of all the things we have witnessed him do, that remains for me one of the foulest. And he has essentially, or his regime has essentially, done exactly the same thing in the context of the Falkland Islands, or his administration has done exactly the same thing in the context of the Falkland Islands in the last 72 hours. It's extraordinary, isn't it, to think of how utterly defining insults like that would have been for any other president. So, it's interesting. I said people who I thought would know better, or people who would once have known better, were buying into the conspiracy theories. But there's a few in the inbox today. I don't know that it is necessarily Idiot's Corner territory, but stay tuned to find out. So, he is going. Trump is Trump. The king is visiting. And I think we can allow ourselves, on a Monday morning, we can allow ourselves a slightly speculative morning. So there are serious and borderline silly answers to the questions that I'm about to ask you. I don't particularly enjoy when we go too silly. I know what you're thinking, pot kettle. But it has to be at least vaguely feasible. I don't think, you know, the king's going to turn up and reveal that he was the character running the London Marathon dressed as Peppa Pig. I think you can go too silly sometimes. But when we talked about the wisdom of the visit in general, I found myself thinking that the king doesn't want to go particularly. He would have been quite happy for this to have been postponed or cancelled. But he is both the head of and an employee of the state. He has to do what the Prime Minister tells him to do. My reading of it, particularly when the Dimbleby was activated, and I don't believe that either Dimbleby brother would have expressed misgivings about this trip without permission from their friend, the king, or certainly a friend of Jonathan's, perhaps more accurately described as a trusted source or a confidant of David's. But I don't think either Dimbleby brother would have broken cover and expressed misgivings about this trip without sanction from above, which suggested to me that the king himself was not mad keen to go on the trip. I can't imagine the queen has been counting down the days either. But it is going ahead, and it struck me that the worst that could happen is embarrassment for the king or queen or both, and that actually wouldn't be a net negative for the prime minister. So even if Donald Trump insults the prime minister, that makes Donald Trump look bad, and it puts King Charles in a tricky position for which presumably royalists or people whose patriotism extends to the royal family would be outraged on their behalf. How dare you insult the king's prime minister in front of the king? Similarly, if there's some sort of diplomatic debacle akin to Donald Trump making jokes about Pearl Harbor in the presence of the prime minister, then people, and there are still a few, I think, they're mostly confined to the lunatic fringe of the Daily Telegraph now, but there are still a few people in this country who would pick Donald Trump over their own prime minister. Dick Littlejohn at the Daily Mail, of course, boasts about his preferences in that department. There are still a few people in that category. So if you then see the President of the United States of America insulting our king, or embarrassing our king, or humiliating our king, then in a logical universe, and I grant that we don't necessarily inhabit one, in a logical universe, that should actually offer a succor or support to the idea that Keir Starmer, in the context of transatlantic relations, is a man more sinned against than sinning. You kind of have to pick a side. And if you're currently on Donald Trump's side and he insults our king, you probably need to nudge a little bit towards Keir Starmer's side. So a diplomatic disaster or a diplomatic embarrassment, I think, you know, the king gets knocked down, he gets up again. He moves on. The reportage is tomorrow's fish and chip paper. And the idea that Trump is somebody whose disdain for our prime minister, particularly in the context of refusing to join his illegal war in Iran, is something that should be admired. Do you see what I mean? But then you remember who you're dealing with. You remember that you are dealing with somebody about whom we have said on many occasions almost anything is possible and believable, up to and including, it would seem, beliefs that the shooting on Saturday night was a direct and planned response to Trump's plummeting popularity ratings and the ongoing disaster in Iran. A surprising number of you subscribing to that. Thank you for not being cross with me for poo-pooing it at this stage. Maybe it'll be one of those things that I have to resile from and undertake my own reverse ferret at some dim and distant point in the future. But I honestly think it's highly unlikely, profoundly unlikely, to the point of almost being impossible. The only caveat being that you can't sit here every morning and say, with Trump, there is no depth to which he would not go. There is no depth he would not plumb. So if you've got that on the table, then you can't actually dismiss with full certainty any allegation or accusation of wrongdoing. But I'm dismissing this one with as close to full certainty as I can go. What I do not know is this. What's the best thing that can happen? 0345 60 60 973. How feasible is it that an entirely unreliable character like Trump that we could witness anything meaningful? Because even if it's all, you know, bread and roses, it's all sweetness and light in the meetings, it could, 24 hours later, be completely exploded and undone by events, by the next big outburst. This talk, as someone who has British interests, like the Prime Minister, at the very forefront of my mind and my desires, I can't quite buy into this idea that it's going to be some sort of relationship rehabilitation, that they're going to restore goodwill between the UK and the USA. I'd like to be wrong. I'd like to believe that it could, but you're dealing with a man who will say two completely contradictory things in the same paragraph or in the same social media post. So what exactly would a positive outcome look like? What is the best that could happen? 0345 60 60 973. And then I guess this is where the line between serious and silly becomes a little harder to navigate. What's the worst that could happen? Within the realms of diplomacy, I don't think it would be appropriate, particularly after the events of this weekend, to move into areas of violence or terrorism. But in terms of the relationship and the meetings between the President of the United States of America and the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, or I beg your pardon, the King of the United Kingdom, what is, from our point of view, the very best that could happen on this trip? What would look like a glorious and resounding success? And what is the worst? What would be the thing that you fear, now that you've given it a moment's thought, the thing that could happen that would be absolutely excruciating? Not that I don't believe for very long, but nonetheless, absolutely excruciating. 0345 60 60 973. It's a 4-day visit. It will be over before Mystery Hour. is completed pretty much on Thursday. But for the duration of those 4 days, the eyes of the world, or certainly this corner of the world, are going to be focused laser-like upon the trip. And one of the only things you can say with certainty is that pretty much anything could happen. Take a little minute out of your morning and tell me the best thing. 0345 60 60 973, and potentially the worst thing, or just steps on those paths. It doesn't have to be the hands down, stone cold, most disastrous event. Things that you think, significant things that you think could happen, whether positive or negative. 90 minutes after 10 is the time, and I think we will include sort of Hugh Grant moments from Love Actually, but we have to have a fairly clear idea of what that would look like and sound like, and how diplomatically plausible it might be. Okay? 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it, and the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun.
All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
It's, proof positive, isn't it, of the thing I say to you on a fairly regular basis now, that we don't have the tools properly to analyse the situations that we repeatedly find ourselves in as a consequence of Donald Trump being president of the United States of America. You know, you don't know how you should report upon the antics or the activities of, for example, a self-confessed sex offender or a multiple felon. But you have to work your way through it. So if this Falkland story was resurrected in the context of an Oval Office meeting between the King and the President, then what would that involve? How disastrous would that be? What would the repercussions? Should the King bring it up? Should the King actually use this opportunity to step a little further outside the parameters of decorum and diplomacy to put forward the British interest? If the King is going to represent the national interest, what should he do? What would be a good outcome? What would be a positive? I like this from Ian. The best thing is that nothing happens. The worst thing is that nothing changes. Something's going to happen. Something is almost certainly going to be newsworthy. And even if it isn't, of course, we'll all have to pretend that it is. But given that the path, if you like, the landscape is completely clear and completely empty, that the idea of the things that would be significant or the things that would be notable, momentous, I find it currently fascinating. And I want to know what you think. James is in Gloucester. James, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thank you for having me on yet again.
You're very welcome. What do you mean, yet again? How many times have you been on?
This is my third time now.
There you go. That's pretty good. Third time lucky. Come on, then.
I just wanted to say that I think one of the most detrimental things that could happen, in my view, is for Trump to mention anything about the Falklands. Because I think his criticism of Keir Starmer and, you know, the job that Keir Starmer is doing is bad enough anyway. He should stay out of that.
Well, before we get on to the Falklands, how bad is it if he does? Because, you know, imagine for a minute George Bush or Barack Obama or Ronald Reagan meeting the Queen and insulting the current Prime Minister, whoever it was, whether it was Tony Blair or Margaret Thatcher. I mean, it's utterly unthinkable. We're kind of acting as if that's probably going to happen, but hey ho, on we go with this guy.
Yeah, sadly, I think it is likely to happen. I mean, you know, in years gone by, that would be unthinkable. But we're not living in that world anymore. We're not in Kansas anymore, James. This is completely uncharted territory.
So we should put that up as a sort of known, insulting Keir Starmer in front of the King. Your Prime Minister is not a good guy, or he should have done this, or he should. I mean, crikey. The distance from Kansas, the distance that we've fallen as a sort of relationship is extraordinary. But what would the Falklands do? How would that resonate?
I just think it's a direct attack on British sovereignty. And I think demonstrably, the US, is positioning itself to be the regional hegemon of the Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, this punishment...
It's not really anymore, is it?
Well, no, but I think it's trying to be. And obviously, you know, the Falklands being in that area of the world, I think it's a way to really sort of, for Trump to stick his claws in.
And speaking of matters military, should the King himself bring anything up? Should the King bring up the so-called ceasefire in the Middle East left 14 more Lebanese people dead at the hands of the Israeli army this weekend? Should the King say anything about that?
Well, it's hard, isn't it? Because the royal family are supposed to sort of like, you know, err on the side of caution when it comes to, politics and geopolitics. But I think it would be the right thing to do. I think everybody in the world needs to be putting pressure on Trump now to end this war, because it's going to be, the ramifications of it are going to be like we've never seen if it goes on for much longer.
No, and of course it's going to start hitting our purses and our pockets ever harder. There's one warning this weekend, even if it all ended tomorrow, we'd be paying higher prices at the tills for the next 9 months, which is going to affect some people a lot more than it is going to affect others. That I don't know. I mean, you sort of come away thinking Trump doesn't really seem to register any influence or any input from anybody except the last person that he spoke to, and that can be undone, as we've established, by the next person that we spoke to. But just to go back to the Falklands thing, given what he said about Afghanistan, if he said something vile about the Falklands, we would just... Would it be different if he said it in the presence of the King? Do you see what I mean? Because the Afghanistan comments, I thought... They're up there with saying, insulting John McCain for being a prisoner of war, insulting Robert Mueller after he died, saying he was delighted that he died, insulting Robert Reiner after he was killed, it would appear, by his own son. If he did something in the presence of the King, does it change the timbre? Does it change the nature of the insult? Would we expect people that have given Donald Trump the benefit of pretty much every doubt going to suddenly discover reserves of rage and disgust because he did it in front of the King?
I think so. And the reason I think that is because he's already doing things that he said he'd never do. You know, he didn't want to enter into new wars yet. He started this thing in Iran. He's threatened, you know, the sovereignty of Greenland. I just think that the US has become a bit of a predator state.
I think
we need to listen to what he says, even though, you know, he's not coherent a lot of the time and he contradicts himself. But you need to take these things seriously, because who knows what they're capable of and what they'll do next.
But of course that's another argument for keeping him sweet or keeping a lid on things, isn't it? That unpredictability and that sort of snake-like temperament. Thank you, James. Coming up to 10:29, it is, I guess it's going to be a fairly broad consensus on what is the best thing that can happen. Answer, nothing. Imagine if we didn't have a show on Wednesday. Tomorrow might be a little bit too soon, but by Wednesday morning, imagine if we haven't got an hour of our program dedicated to discussing that thing, what just happened. That would be a win, wouldn't it? And from a diplomatic point of view, you're sitting around the table and you are looking at the schedule, the agenda. There's been a few tweaks to it. There is concern about security, but you're in the inner circle. You are part of the retinue, and you are... What do they call it? You are forecasting. You are planning. and you are saying to each other, what is the best that we can hope for here? What is the absolute win? And you say, well, old boy, because that, I believe, is how they talk in these circles. You say, well, old boy, I think the best that we can all hope for is absolutely nothing. There's that funny fellow on the radio who talks about swinging penduli. I think the best that we can hope for is an unswung pendulum on this trip, that everything is exactly the same when we leave as it was when we arrived. In which case, we come back to the original question of what's the point of the trip in the first place, and whether or not it should be undertaken. So, in fact, let's add that to the list. What is the point of this trip from anybody's point of view, apart from massaging Donald Trump's ego? Given his unreliability and unpredictability, what is the point of this trip from the perspective of the British national interest? When it was arranged, we were still trying to cozy up to Donald Trump. Finally, Keir Starmer over Iran discovered the backbone that many believe he should have demonstrated a little earlier and told Donald Trump where to stick his illegal war. So what on earth is, what's in it for us? 0345 6060973. David Dom is here now with your headlines.
The White House insists the King and Queen will be safe on their four-day state visit to the US. They're still due to arrive later following the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner at the weekend. A 37-year-old man is the latest to be arrested by police investigating attacks on Jewish premises in London. He was detained in Devon on suspicion of preparing terrorist acts. And the Prime Minister is setting out measures to combat retail crime. Sir Keir Starmer says he wants to put an end to what he calls a shoplifting free-for-all. LBC weather, some showers in the northeast, warm and sunny across the south, turning cloudy with some rain later, and a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said, nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say naturists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Tackles the crunch and theatrical diving. Rivals on terraces sobbing and crying. Last minute winners that change everything. These are a few of our favourite things. When you're singing, yet not winning. When your bet's gone bad. We simply remember our favourite things. And then we'll feel so glad.
For all your favourite things, visit BetVictor. 18 plus gambleaware.org. Please gamble responsibly.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
Your time is valuable. Your perspective should be too. The Economist cuts through the noise with the stories that truly shape your world.
How can you believe that a new regime won't crush you just like the previous one?
Online scams are stranger than they've ever been.
When the world's turned upside down, know which way is up. Read, watch, or listen to The Economist.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:32. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Chris takes up the point I made a moment ago. The best thing that can happen, he writes, is that you are not on about it on this show in a few days. If we are, that means something's gone horribly wrong, and therefore you will be talking about it. It's like that. It's like that character in the Fast Show, the lifeguard. He's got 1984, nobody drowned. 1985, nobody drowned. 1986, no. 1987, one person drowned. As if he's trying to sort of minimise the awfulness of someone drowning while he was on duty. I can't do that. I can't really come on air on Wednesday and go, nothing's happened. Give me a ring now and talk about it. So people say to me sometimes, how do you handle the madness of the news that's been in place for about 10 years. I just have a little saying. I say it's often very good for business and very bad for the soul. Donald Trump's the sort of patron saint of that catchphrase. Bad for business. Good for business, forgive me. Bad for the soul. Speaking of which, the foreign minister of Iran has just arrived in Russia. What do we do now? UK politics, Nigel Farage, of course, considers the president of Russia to be the politician he admires most in the world. So whose side is he on in this war? The side of the politician he admires most in the world, or the side of the bravest man he's ever met, which is, of course, Donald Trump? 10:34 is the time. A little reminder of how mad UK politics is as the king makes his way to the White House. Gary is in Calais. Gary, what have you got?
Morning, sir. I can't say the best thing that I'd like to know to happen on the tour, but certainly I think what will happen is that Trump's going to run his mouth off at some point with the king.
I mean, it's like night following day, right?
Absolutely. And what you've got to remember, they're celebrating 250 years of a victory over British troops. They're not, because it's not till 1883 and there wasn't a guarantee of victory, etc.
Bit niche, Gary. Bit niche.
But what he's going to do around in two and say, sir, he's going to say something about beautiful American soldiers defeating the British Army. We did this, we did that. And what's Charles going to stand there? He'll fail to mention America had Spanish allies, Dutch allies,
French allies.
French navy that stopped the British getting through down to the West Indies.
Lafayette!
Exactly. America invaded Canada, got a bit of a good hiding, and he's going to turn around and say something.
For people who don't know, Gary is a military historian of some repute, and the reason why he calls us from Calais is because he conducts guided tours of the battlefields and the cemeteries there. So it's a little unfair of me to say niche, because of course this is a celebration of the outwardly the 250th anniversary of the US independence, and Donald Trump, he'll probably try to claim credit for the victory in some sense. I'm not even joking, Gary. He will probably try to, I don't know, say if it had been me, it would have been over much quicker or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, what you've got to remember, and is he going to turn around and say how many American loyalists and the Tories, as they were known, were actually fighting for the British?
Yes.
Okay, is he going to turn around and mention the Germans who were fighting for the British, the Hanoverians, who got out of hand on occasion?
And okay, so now this is where your enthusiasms possibly do colour your contribution. This is not likely to cause levels of upset akin to him insulting our Afghan dead, is it? I mean,
it's going to lead on, isn't it?
Well,
he's going to say
yes.
The British Army. He's going to turn around there's no major battlefield to 1776, you could argue.
Yes.
Are there any memorials to British dead he's going to go to? And what's the king going to go there when he goes on, harking on about American victories?
Yeah.
Okay, the 13 colonies over the British Empire, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he's the leader of the king, or certainly the Commonwealth.
Do you think the king, I mean, just your entirely personal opinion, is it right that he's going?
No.
Why not? For these reasons?
I think because he's insulted. You know, whether hate Starmer or like Starmer, he's the leader of our country in that the political head. And you can't go, and he's degenerating England again and again and again. And he turns around and says, you know, Chuck, he's a great mate of mine. And Charles must be thinking,
oh, Lord.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
I'm going to sit there and take that. He's a great mate of mine.
So the question of whether the monarch should go to the commemoration, to the anniversary, is not the same question, depending on who the president is. Because that's the counter to your position, is it doesn't matter who the president is. This is about relations between two countries, not two people.
Absolutely. And what they celebrate, they're going for any particular reason. 1776 doesn't really work, you could argue.
Yeah.
Where are the Spanish going to be? Are the Dutch going to be there? The French going to be there?
I get all that. And what about the Falklands? I don't know about you. I was slightly taken aback on Friday to learn that it's on a memo about things they can do to punish the UK. They want to chuck Spain out of NATO, or they've mooted chucking Spain out of NATO, and refusing to recognise British sovereignty in the Falklands would be a way of hurting us. But the backdrop to the King's blooming visit.
First off, no Spain, no America, I would argue, in many ways, including the Falklands, like many of us, I'm of an age when we remember it.
Absolutely.
Okay? Quite well, I was in Fleet Street at the time, and we're getting chucked out of Reuters when all of the photographs are coming in and no one was allowed to be in the building.
Wow.
Okay, I can remember that quite well. And when you look at what America did at the time, in the lack of support, you could argue, during the Falklands. Don't go on about Exocet missiles being manufactured in France. There were components in Exocet manufactured in the UK, company I work for. America now, Europe, it might as well be the far side of the moon as they're concerned.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So again, we're dancing on this particular pinhead, aren't we? Of he could do all manner of outrageous and disgusting things, but given that we now expect outrageous and disgusting things from him, how much would it matter? The resonance of a Bush or an Obama doing some of the things that we are speculating upon would be, I think, audible from space, but the resonance of a Trump doing it, I do not know. I do not know. I was reading up about the Falklands again at the, as in something else I was reading up about this weekend. Two things that I discovered this weekend. Number one was the depth and breadth of belief that the last assassination attempt on Donald Trump, the one where his ear got injured, was a fake, was a false flag, and that's coming more from fans or former fans of the man than it is from critics. And the other thing I learnt about that I wasn't previously aware of was that during the run-up to and during the 1982 conflict in the Falkland Islands, Israel was supplying significant weaponry to the Argentine junta, which again puts recent events in a slightly different light. Thank you, Gary. Paul is in Cambridge. Paul, what would you like to say?
Yes, so on this subject, James. So
yes.
The reason from America's point of view why Charles is going is to massage Trump's ego, because it always is. Unfortunately, we are complicit now by sending Charles. He should never have been sent, but he's going to go there in an effort to massage Trump's ego. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, what is the worst that can happen?
Well, Trump's going to do what he did to the Japanese. He's going to embarrass Charles in England, either about the Falklands, about our soldiers or something. He's bound to do this. And Charles, unfortunately, has his hands tied. He's meant to be apolitical. And he'll have, the worst thing that happened, he'll have to sit there and smirk and laugh along with the other sycophant.
But that's the bit that I mean, I'm not a particularly flag-waving royalist. And you know, I think that the necessity of forgetting that royals are mere humans is a dangerous thing. But that room is, as you've reminded us, it's full of cronies and sycophants. I mean, it's a hideous conclave of cretins. And there's no one there to leaven the pudding, is there? To leaven so what will Charles have to do? He'll have to sit there with a rictus grin. And they used to say that his late mother, you probably know this, Paul. I used to love these little anecdotes. His late mother would sometimes just push food if she was at a state banquet somewhere else and she'd been served a local delicacy that she found unpalatable. She was apparently very good at pushing her food around the plate without really eating any of it in the way that it looked as if she had eaten some of it by the time. So that language of weapons grade diplomacy. What does Charles do if Trump says something comparable to the Pearl Harbor comments or the insulting of our war dead in Afghanistan comments? In the presence of the king, the room starts chuckling and patting him on the back and giving him biscuits like the recalcitrant toddler he clearly is. What does Charles do in that moment?
Well, we'd love to think it would be a sort of Love Actually.
I'm terribly sorry, moment. Mr. President. I'm going to have to stop you there. That kind of thing. He's not going to do that, though, is he?
No, he's not going to do it. I'd love to think he would do it. As I said to Abby, if Princess Anne was there, she'd do it. But unfortunately, Charles won't do it. He'll do his kingly duty in accordance to the way his mother used to do her duty, which is to be apolitical. Mm. Hopefully he won't smirk and laugh like the sycophants. At least not that.
Well, he definitely won't do that. He definitely won't do that. So what's in it for us?
Nothing. Nothing. Only minuses. As usual, only minuses, and I think we've humiliated ourselves by making this gesture of sending the king. It means something to the country when you send, and to the world when you send the king.
Yeah, the deal was done. The deal was done when some people were still clinging to the carcass of credibility for Donald Trump, wasn't it? Because it was after the state visit when they let him drive around Windsor Castle in a carriage, and then they sent him home again with a goodie bag and a lollipop for clearing his plate. And then the reciprocal invitation was issued and accepted. That was before he launched his war with Benjamin Netanyahu in Iran. It was before yet more evidence of his obvious depravity emerged. And I don't know that we can rescind an invitation once it's given. It was given when people still thought that mollifying Trump or appeasing Trump was a worthwhile exercise.
We had this conversation before, the rabid dog conversation I had with you, and we had this topic. I understand what you're saying, James, but I saw this in 2015. Why was it obvious to me, a mere mortal, a nobody, that this guy was deadly dangerous?
Oh, I don't think you win any prizes for that. I mean, lots of people thought that he was deadly dangerous. It was more the shame of our media, I think. It's people who get paid for their opinions, like Dick Littlejohn at the Daily Mail, who couldn't see the evidence that was blindingly obvious to you and to anybody honest. But, of course, you know the answer to this. The answer is racism, misogyny and climate change denial. If those are your three guiding stars, the three things that you love most in the world, any combination of the above, racism, misogyny and climate change denial, in fourth place, transphobia as well, of course, attacks upon transgender people. If that is what floats your boat, that's what gets you out of bed every morning, that's what puts lead in your pencil when you're sitting down to write your column, then you will never, ever, ever be able to abandon Trump, because he not only represents the very worst of you, he also excuses it. And that is why some people can see it with incredible clarity, and some people will never be able to admit that they can see it too, because it's the depravity that they love. So the depravity denial becomes de rigueur. It's 10:45.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I think it does terminal damage to this image of the Prime Minister as a fastidious, careful, process-driven lawyer with an eye for detail. I think it does a serious amount of damage to the idea that while, yes, it's a very difficult job, this being Prime Minister business, that Starmer is actually a decent bloke. I don't think he is. I think he has knowingly attempted to bury someone to save his own skin.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both captain hats for the boat ride.
Train back. So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result! Love this shot of them driving the boat. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Quite a few of you suggesting in texts and suggesting it in a diplomatic fashion that some of the most fraught territory that Donald Trump could start exploring in the presence of the king would involve the king's late wife, Diana, Princess of Wales. And of course, we are talking about a man past whom you would put nothing, would you? Is there a comment so inappropriate, so unpleasant, so wrong that you cannot imagine Donald Trump saying it? Greeted the death of a former head of the FBI by saying, "I'm glad he's dead." Talked about John McCain, a Vietnam War hero, as being, "I prefer my heroes not to get caught. This is a quintuple draft dodger." Someone who talked about the hundreds of British service personnel who died in Afghanistan, essentially he called them cowards. Can you conceive of a comment so gross that Donald Trump would not say it? Because if you can, I've got a bridge you might like to buy. And then you're left with this thing that always comes fast behind observations about Donald Trump, which is the question of whether or not any of it matters at all. Are we wasting our time? This, he could say something so utterly, utterly vile. And then 12 hours later, we'd have all moved on to somewhere else. It was Friday that we discovered they were thinking of reviewing their recognition of British sovereignty in the Falklands to punish us for not being war criminals, for not joining Netanyahu and Trump on their illegal escapades in Iran. They now want to punish NATO allies for obeying the rules of NATO. And on Friday, we learned that something, as I think Gary in Calais highlighted a moment ago, something that has all a unique place in the collective memory for people of certain generations in this country. You know, an illegal invasion of sovereign British territory that was repelled by political and military determination. A really proud moment in British history, unless you're a fully paid up pacifist, which I, position I respect, but don't share. And he is now, that has been tainted, that is being polluted, that memory is being insulted. There is no depth he would not plumb, but does any of it actually matter? Because 12 hours later he'll do or say something else, he'll announce another ceasefire, or he'll announce another obliteration, or he'll announce another U-turn, or he'll announce another two-week deadline, or and we'll all be moving on and talking about something else. Best thing that can happen? We forget pretty quickly the bad thing that happened. In terms of a net positive, something that can be improved or enhanced, at the moment on my list, there is nothing. Perhaps David in Bayswater will change that. David, what made you pick up the phone?
Just a few quick points. First of all, I think everyone would agree that this visit from the start, even before the war and everything, it's symbolic and performative. And that it's been like that. All royal visits are like that. And I think it's important that we turn the other cheek and we be very diplomatic and rise above the pettiness of Trump. And I know you and many people feel very insulted by what he said, rightfully so. But I think we need to move beyond that and show that the king is representing Britain and he's going to America, not just to see Trump. He's also going to go and see the Congress and the Senate. And that's important in the future, because if we create positive feelings among the Senate and the Congress, then they're more likely to vote for things maybe that are in our interest in the future.
You really think so?
Yes, I do, actually.
I hope you're right, but I mean, the evidence is not on your side, is it?
Well, and it's just my opinion, but...
I like evidence. And we have to admit the evidence is not on your side, that he's suddenly going to become...
Well, you don't know the future, James, do you?
No, I know the past. You don't get evidence from the future, you get evidence from the past, and the evidence is he's about as reliable as a boa constrictor.
No, but he won't be there forever, and some of the Senate people will be there afterwards, and they will remember the visit and think, yeah, Britain really does respect our country.
Yeah.
And the point is the relationship between Britain and the US is 250 years, you know, it's very long. It goes beyond the king and beyond the president. We have to remember that. It's more than these two individuals.
No, I don't think everybody knows that. Yeah. With respect.
It's two individuals.
Yes, well, that's what I've chosen to do. I mean, it is a conversation about two individuals. It's kind of a given that the context extends further, both backwards and forwards, into the past and into the future. But a fairly clear question about what's the worst thing that can happen in that room, if you think back to Volodymyr Zelensky's visit and the orchestrated, attempted humiliation of a man who is fighting against Vladimir Putin. This is what I mean, David, by there being no depth that he would not plumb. You think of something unspeakably hideous that a United States president could do in the presence of our king, and you bet me your bottom dollar that Donald Trump won't do it, and you wouldn't take that bet.
But,
you wouldn't take
James,
that bet.
James, you can't frame the relationship between the king and Donald Trump as with Zelensky. It's completely different. The likelihood of him behaving towards the king as he did to Zelensky is, I think, absolutely minimal.
So to whom do you think he has behaved respectfully and appropriately in his term as president this time?
Well, the point is the king is far more neutral. He's not coming there as a head of a government. He's just a symbol
of
Britain.
He's a head of state. But to whom do you think Donald Trump has behaved respectfully in the Oval Office this time around?
But none of them have had
Prime Minister of Japan.
The
Prime Minister of Japan.
The king is an apolitical figure. He's not like those other leaders, James. You just can't make the comparison.
To whom has he behaved appropriately or respectfully?
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant because the king is in a completely different league.
So nobody.
No, you're trying to frame the argument to make your point, but
I'm asking you a friendly question. He's met other heads of state and he's insulted them, so why would our king be different?
Because the king is in a different kind of position as the other people. He doesn't have any political... Trump knows that the king is just forced to go there and represent the British government. There's no reason he's going to be aggressive towards the king.
But he's already lied about it. He's already lied about him.
Well, that may be, but I just don't see the scenario you're trying to paint.
I'm not trying to paint any scenario. I'm just wondering. I mean, there is an answer to your question. The only person he's treated in the Oval Office with appropriate decorum and respect would be Benjamin Netanyahu, actually. But maybe the king will get lucky and he'll get that sort of treatment. But if you honestly don't think there's a possibility of him saying something about Diana, Princess of Wales, of him saying something about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, of him saying something about the Falkland Islands, of him saying something about Keir Starmer in the presence of the king, then I might put you on my list of potential bridge purchasers, David. Thank you. Steve's in Crawley. Steve, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. How much is your bridge?
Depends. How much have you got?
£20.
Yeah, carry on. What made you pick up the phone? Not to buy a bridge.
No, not to buy a bridge. What can the king gain? What can the king lose?
Yes.
Gain, I think we have to respect the position of President of the United States, not the man.
Yeah, we do.
Because
don't
he's
we?
Not going to be there forever. Because he's not going to be there forever, even though he might think he will, wants to be. What could he potentially lose? And I think there is a really large chance of this, is being humiliated.
Yeah.
Just, as you say, Trump cannot stop saying words that make absolutely no sense. And he could very easily come up with something that he thinks is totally reasonable, but will humiliate the king and Great Britain and probably Europe.
And then it's over by the next day. This is the best thing we've got. The silver lining to the cloud that you describe is that we're so used to it now that we will watch the news cycle turn around and move on. I mean, the Afghanistan comments, there's so many things he's done that I find... For me, it began with the abuse of that disabled journalist, actually. The points that you look back on and think, that should have been the end of it. That should have been the point at which everybody involved said, no, we can't possibly contemplate this, we can't countenance it. But not only, of course, did he win that, but he came back after losing to win another election. All the points in the path that you just think provide evidence that people are prepared to put up with anything in return for whatever it is that he gives them, he will do something pretty grim in the presence of the king, and we've already factored it into our contemplations. It's expected.
He will. But if he does do something awful, and in a way, I'm kind of hoping he does.
Yeah, no,
because
what you
I
mean.
Think it's about time. I think it's about time that the rest of the world had the ammunition to move away from its dependence on America, and certainly on the dollar, because the euro is now bigger than the dollar. But
I'm glad I paused to let you finish that point. I was about to call you a sweet summer child there, Steve, because I thought you were going to say that other people, the scales may fall from their eyes if he insults the king, and they'll see what he has always been, but which they have been unable to see previously, because I don't think either of us expect that now from the sort of fully paid up members of the still fans club. But yeah, I mean, the idea, it's a difficult one though, because you describe a dichotomy. On the one hand, it's much more than the current incumbent. It's a relationship between two countries. On the other hand, the dollar's dominance on global markets is something that we now question and possibly want to see an end of, because we have been shown that the slightly lazy presumption that America would always be our friend, always be our ally, always act in the interests of the West has been completely destroyed by Donald Trump. 10:58 is the time. Thank you, Steve. Last word on this to Rhiann, who's in Swansea. Rhiann, what do you reckon?
Oh, hello. I'm afraid my thunder has been stolen a bit by the previous two callers.
Don't worry.
I don't think that when we talk about Trump humiliating King Charles,
yes, I
think we need to be very, very careful about how we frame that. Trump is he's not a self-made man. He is a spoilt boy, and he's managed to bully himself into this position where he is a president. Charles has been ahead of the curve with a lot of things, you know, just for example, ecology, botany, and all of that. And he's not the regent that his mother was. She was showing her thoughts very subtly, for example, the European Union blue outfit with the yellow, but I think Charles has got, obviously he's more modern. He's got the influence of his, his sons and whatever. Because we've got William and Kate due to go over as well, haven't we, at some point?
I think so. More likely. I mean, but we still don't know what speaking up would look like. I agree with you. I don't know what word to use when I describe what happened to Zelensky in the Oval Office. Attempted humiliation. Because he wasn't humiliated in the sense that everybody decent watching thought that he was treated appallingly and came out with more warmth and affection for him than they did before. So, I mean, it was an attempted humiliation. And if the king finds himself in that sort of situation, it would be awful to watch.
I don't think that Charles would do what Zelensky did, though.
No.
I don't think Charles would fight his corner, if you know what I mean. I think
he'd just smile and let it all wash over him.
He would just watch Trump, this isn't going to be the correct phrase, but not exactly give him enough rope to hang himself, but just to let Trump go on enough, and I'm sure within a facial expression.
He'll be in a bigger room, is what you're saying, than the Oval Office.
Yes.
He'll be in front of the world while Trump will be performing for his coterie of cronies, sycophants.
Indeed.
And also...
there will be people behind the scenes as well, because, despite his, and as your previous callers said, he's a lame duck president now. So there will be people behind the scenes, J.D. Vance or Rubio or whoever.
Mm.
They've got their egos to be massaged as well.
The king will assume a particular place. And David in Bayswater, I think the point he was making would be that he's not going to attack Charles. And the point I was making was I don't think he is going to do a Zelensky on him. Obviously, he's more likely to do a Prime Minister of Japan and say something completely, completely outrageous, just grim. But not, no one's going to die. It's not going to be a, either metaphorically or actually. It's just going to be like your, tell you what it's going to be like, Rianne. It's going to be like your, slightly sort of poorly uncle sitting at the Christmas table and everybody just sitting there waiting for him to say something outrageous or waiting for him to say something hideous or really sexist or really racist or whatever it is that your, uncle that can't really be trusted at social occasions can be relied upon to do at social occasions. And you're right, you're absolutely right. If anyone can cope with that, it's the man who's had a lifetime's training on responding diplomatically to difficult circumstances. God save the king.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Britain's ambassador to the US says all the appropriate security measures are in place for the King and Queen's state visit. Buckingham Palace says the trip is going ahead as planned from this evening following the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Royal commentator Sarah Hewson's told LBC President Trump holds the King in high regard.
The king has an ability to be the Trump whisperer, if you like, and that is why he's being deployed. This is soft power at its finest. You remember Keir Starmer when he brandished that invitation in the Oval Office at the White House for the president. That really was his Trump card, and that's what they're pulling out at the moment at this point of pretty rock-bottom relations between the UK and the US, far from a special relationship.
Counter-terror officers investigating attacks on Jewish premises in London have made another arrest. A 37-year-old has been detained in Devon on suspicion of preparing terrorist acts. A total of 26 arrests have now been made following a series of attacks in the capital. The Prime Minister will chair a meeting of the Emergency Cobra Committee tomorrow, as he's warned of the impact of the Iran war could continue for some time. Sir Keir Starmer says members of the Bank of England will join to talk about the effects from rising oil prices. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister's been speaking in Lancashire as he outlines what he's doing to bring down retail crime. It includes plans to boost neighbourhood policing and scraps immunity for lower value thefts.
Working people, grafters, go to work, do the right thing, keep our high streets thriving, and yet too often they're abused or assaulted by people who think they can get away with it. It's disgraceful. It's disgraceful that people just working in their shop have to take abuse from customers. And it's disgraceful that people can have their lives and livelihoods ruined by persistent shop theft.
And Childline says it's giving counselling to children younger than 11 about exam and revision stress. The NSPCC says they describe being overwhelmed and feeling guilty about taking breaks. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 points at 10,386. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, some showers in the northeast, warm and sunny across the south, turning cloudy with some rain later, and highs of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm David Dom.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 11 is the time. Quite a few of you pointing out that if Donald Trump can attack the Pope, then I don't think that the King, King Charles, will be afforded or enjoys any special status if the Pope is fair game for his hideous rantings. Then, you know, the King will probably consider himself lucky if he comes home uninsulted, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Keep an eye on those proceedings. Catch up with Simon Marks later this later in this show as well about events in Washington on Saturday night, UK time, and the ramifications thereof. But we return now to what I've told you on a few occasions is, in many ways, the most important thing we ever talk about. Because this is about your life. It's not just about your life, it's about the length of your life and the quality of your life. I'm interested in catching up with a little more about that speech that Keir Starmer has just given, because I think he's at his best when he's talking about the path not taken, when he's talking about, and this is, for me, is the difference between right-wing and left-wing politics, when he's talking about people who society can help, rather than people for whom society can help them help themselves, which is a, you know, a slightly lazy and simplistic analysis of left versus right politics. But when he talks about his late brother Nick and people that society should be doing more for, helping them to get ahead or helping them to make more meaningful contributions and lead more meaningful lives, that for me is what politics should be about. You make a list of all the things we should be talking about in this country instead of whatever Nigel Farage's latest fever dream may be, moving, as I told you it would, away from immigration, because that is now coming down, and towards people living on welfare, which won't include pensioners, of course, by far the biggest recipients of welfare payments in this country, but will include people on universal credit who've got jobs, people with disabilities, almost anybody you can think of who has need for state support will be in the firing line, just as I told you would happen is now happening. So of all the things that we should be talking about, if you're truly patriotic, what do you want for your neighbour? Do you want them to have a nylon flag dangling from their lamppost as soon as possible? Or do you want them to have more years of good life? If your patriotism is about people rather than symbols and racism, which of course, tragically, often co-opts patriotism, as Dr. Johnson observed, the last refuge of a scoundrel. But if your patriotism is about people, about your neighbours, about your friends, about your family, about your fellow humans on these islands, then what do you want for those people? You want them to have more years of good life. Not as in Richard Briers and Felicity Kendall necessarily, but just as in enjoyable, healthy years. So we talked a lot about the difference between the rich and the poor. I think we did it last week or the week before, and it's a subject of abiding fascination to me, because I honestly think we're probably never more siloed than we are when it comes to health privilege and health deprivation, because we live in the same country and we think that we have access to the same NHS and we can go to the same shops, although we've got different amounts of money to spend. How can there possibly be a 20-year difference between people living in the same country when it comes to life expectancy or when it comes to health outcomes? But today's story is not about that. Today's story is actually about the UK performing much worse than other countries. Over the past decade, the healthy life expectancy, as in the number of years of healthy life you can expect to lead, since 2016, I don't know if you can think of anything significant that happened in 2016 that was supposed to make all of our lives better. I'm sure we'll come up with something if we put our heads together. But since 2016, the United Kingdom has seen that healthy life expectancy drop by around 2 years. We're living in an era where technological advances and various other improvements should be delivering constant incremental improvement to our lives. When you think about the accumulated wealth of our population, when you think about the ease with which we can do things that were once not possible, whether you want to focus on indoor toilets and central heating or running water and convenience stores that are open all the time. And even people like me, born in the 70s, some people have a slightly rose-tinted or sepia-tinted view of the past. Some people see everything in black and white. But by all objective measures, things have got better, right? So why on earth is our healthy life expectancy falling? By 2 years, the highest in the world. And yes, Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings handled the COVID pandemic disastrously when it is compared to other countries, and that is going to be part of the problem. And then you have the Osborne's razor. Don't text me to say that it's Occam's. I have invented Osborne's razor. I'm not misspeaking. It is the question of problems in society in 2026 that, when you dig down into them, often lead back to George Osborne's decision to punish the poorest people in the country for no discernible reason. So poverty, poor housing, and then lifestyle factors such as obesity, all to blame, along with the impact of the COVID pandemic. Now, I mean, none of those are unique to the United Kingdom, but all of those are contributory factors to the decline in the number of healthy years you can expect to live. There is an exception to this observation. Would you like to have a pop at what the exception is? A region where things have got better. A region that has seen an improvement in healthy life expectancy over this period. Because I have to tell you, this, more than anything at the moment, makes my blood boil. The maligning of my adopted home by various foreign liars and racists is the thing I'm probably going to write another book about. And I swore to you that if I ever announced I was intending to write another book, you were to take me out and metaphorically shoot me. But I apart from that thing we touched on in the last hour about Donald Trump insulting, you're right, I didn't invent Osborne's razor. It was someone texted me. I think they were called James. My apologies. I can't believe I've just stolen that from you. Apart from the insulting of our war dead, the thing that makes my blood boil, and I'm more or less immune to boiling blood doing this for a living, you know, is the lies and the appalling calumnies being visited upon my home, London town. Not specifically Brentford, but London, by liars and racists all over the internet, and indeed all over this country. The number of people who've never visited London who are convinced that it is absolutely hell on earth and entirely unsafe and shockingly poor and dangerous and full of foreigners and all of these things are living in parts of the country where their healthy life expectancy is falling while ours is rising. London is the only region in the United Kingdom that has seen an improvement in healthy life expectancy over the last 10 years. I might be a little bit niche to look at that. It might be a little bit niche to wonder why London is doing so much. But would it? No, maybe it wouldn't be. I just don't want you to feel excluded from the conversation if you're not in London. Because there are at least three elements to this conversation already in place. What one is why the UK, one is why the last 10 years, and one is why not London? And I think that we will do all of those. So for the avoidance of doubt, this isn't an opinion, this is counting. The UK is one of only five of the richest 21 countries to see healthy life expectancy decline over the last 10 years, so it's not unique, but it has fallen the furthest. The steepest fall in the wealthy world, if you like, the steepest fall in the life expectancy of rich nations in the last 10 years, only 5 out of 21 have gone down, and we have gone down the furthest. Question number one, why? 03456060973. Why would the UK be suffering more than any other country in the world when it comes to healthy life expectancy? And look me in the eye and tell me that this isn't a rather more important story than whatever Nigel Farage is wanging on about today. This is a country in which your years of healthy life are diminishing further and faster than anywhere else in the world. Obviously a direct consequence of austerity, almost certainly of Brexit, and pretty clearly of the appalling handling of the COVID pandemic by Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings. But nonetheless, there will be more detailed answers to that question, more obvious reasons. Why? Why is the UK falling further and faster than any other country in the world when it comes to years of healthy life expectancy? And why is London moving in the other direction? I don't think it can be about the cleaner air, can it? Because London had a much bigger problem than anywhere else in the first place. Maybe if you were comparing London to other cities, then ULEZ and cleaner air might be part of the answer as to why we can expect more health. Think about all the bozos who were brainwashed into thinking that ULEZ was something that they should have been opposed to. What do we want? Dirty air. When do we want it? Always. I'm going to go and cut down cameras because I love dirty air. I want my children to be breathing petrol fumes. Yeah, down with clean air. Maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't got the science. I ain't got the Latin. But I know that London is going in the opposite direction from the rest of the country, and I want you to tell me why. 03456060973. So why the UK? What I'd like you also to do, and I really love it when we do this, and we don't do it often enough because we don't usually get the comparisons between other countries. We're usually talking about the gulf between the rich and the poor, which is an equally fascinating conversation, but a slightly different one. When you go somewhere else, so if you have spent time in other countries, I want you to tell me what surprises you. So when you are in France or Japan or Germany and you are surprised by something that probably helps to explain why they're healthier than we are. Do you see what I mean? I'll give you a brilliant example. We've talked about this in the past. A couple of years ago, I took a call from a long-distance lorry driver who simply described what was on offer when he parks the rig at a motorway service station. And it was as if he was describing the Elysian Fields. Healthy food, good food, options, choices, presumptions of good health. And then you compare it to what happens when you pull over at Heston, and it's basically Greggs or a sandwich in a plastic bag. They're getting a little bit better, and there are some good service stations in this country, but I want you to tell me what surprises you. And vice versa, if you have spent a lot of time somewhere else, and then you've come to this country, and you've kind of gone a bit goggle-eyed at how we live our lives, you say, yeah, all right, I mean, it's nice to have It's nice to have a sausage roll occasionally, but you can't have four every day. Do you see what I mean? What is it about this country that explains why our healthy life expectancy has dropped further and faster than anywhere else in the world? Anywhere else in the world. And this, of course, at a time when we're paying more attention to it than we ever have done. This is the great conundrum, particularly perhaps for the middle classes, because we are bombarded constantly by exhortations to be healthier. Why don't you have some kale? Please buy an air fryer. Have you had your muesli today? Oh, have I told you about my overnight oats recipe? All of these bombardments that the middle class feel are A, not working, because this statistic holds true across the entire population, and B, not reaching the parts that need reaching most. You know, ultra-processed food is not unique to the United Kingdom, but it's clearly having a worse impact on us than it is on other countries. Why the UK? And the lovely little anecdotal items of evidence that you've got. So I'll tell you what, James, when I moved to the UK, I could not believe that ... Yeah? I couldn't believe that you lot ... What is it that we do that you, as someone who hasn't spent your entire life here, can't quite believe that we do and almost certainly contributes to this decline in healthy life expectancy? So that's why the UK. Why the past decade? What is it about the last 10 years that have seen these things get worse, not better? All right, I'll take anything you've got on that. 0345 6060973. Listen, I am a Brexit obsessive. I will tell you that my supermarkets, and I go to quite a few different ones, are nowhere near as well stocked in 2026 as they were in 2016. We run out of stuff more quickly and stuff is more expensive. That might be part of it. I speak as someone who doesn't really need to check the prices when he's pushing his trolley or carting his basket around Morrison's, but he clocks when shelves are empty, particularly fresh food. If I want fresh fruit and vegetables, it was never, ever, ever the case previously that they wouldn't be on the shelves, and now sometimes, not always, not, but sometimes they're not. I don't know. Someone perhaps better versed in supply chains might be able to answer that question. So why the last 10 years? Why has that had such a bad decline in this country? So why the UK? I know I said worse, sir. Nobody's perfect. I won't say it again. I made another mistake in the last hour as well. I'll cough to that in a minute. So why the UK? Why is the UK doing so badly? Why have the last 10 years been so significant? And crucially, at a time when enormous effort is being put into portraying London as some sort of hellhole, why is London doing better than the rest of the country? Why is London getting healthier while the rest of the country is getting unhealthier? And that is the question I think I'm not most interested in an answer to that question, but that might turn out to be the least expected. Because London is the land of Deliveroo. It's not, you see what I mean? You would think London might be worse. Why is it better? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. It's 11:21.
This is LBC.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Notice the change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
Yeah. It's 23 minutes after 11. Why is London the only region in the United Kingdom that has seen an improvement in healthy life expectancy over the last 10 years? I haven't got a Scooby-Doo. Unless it is. Everyone mocks me for the way I say this word, so I'll say it the way you say it now. Is it you, Les? Is it simply the fact that London, more than any other population, Londoners, have... But no, because... Or yes, because there's just fewer cars on our roads. You can taste the difference if you are... minded to. If you notice pollution in London now, and then you remember, God, it was always like this. So you walk up Oxford Street, and occasionally, you know, an old car will go past or something, and you get that little taste. There's a vintage car people near me, and I love it. They're great, the vintage cars, but they're not ULEZ compliant, obviously. I think there's an age, isn't there? An age limit, an age exemption on it. And if a few of them go past in convoy, which happens on a Sunday sometimes, you really taste it on the high street. So could the London thing be down to air cleanliness? I honestly don't know. But I do know that it's true. And I do want to know why you think it is. Julian is in Maidenhead. Julian, what would you like to say?
Good morning, firstly, James.
Hello, Julian.
Hello. So I think it's I don't think the word is concatenation, but a sequence of unfortunate events, to quote the book.
Lemony Snicket.
That's the one. Other country, America, is noticeably the other poor performing country. Now, they haven't had as many of these events in sequence as we have had, but the two things do tally quite well. So you have,
go on.
You have in the United Kingdom, we have austerity. So that obviously, if you bring people's buying power down, they're not going to be able to afford the right quality food. They're not going to be living in the best conditions, et cetera, mental health and so on.
Yes.
Indeed, our own mental health issue is a whole other raft of, you know, a whole pandemic.
So that's Osborne's razor. That takes us back to George Osborne.
Yes, and thanks again to James for that. Not you, James.
I know,
original.
I'm going to actually stop pointing that out until everyone thinks I invented it. It'll be the new footballification, but carry on.
So there's Osborne's razor. Then on top of that, we had Brexit, which has affected, again, even further people's purchasing ability and indeed the supply of food.
But you know what's going to happen this hour? Is that we're going to assemble these things, some more obvious than others, and none of them are going to answer the third question, which is why is London going in the opposite direction?
Well,
London, Brexit, austerity, they're all very London relevant.
I don't know. And they're, like you said, there will have to be... minds may be greater than mine, maybe not as great as yours, but people who are dedicated to looking at the facts, the statistics.
Yes.
Everything that we're saying is basically subjective. We might have some inkling of the objectivity, but they're going to be subjective. Yes, there's a clear difference between London and the rest of the country in terms of the autonomy that it exercises over a very large swathe of population and the differences that they put in place. I say they. I mean him. But there are certain differences that London, different directions London took.
Well, you're thinking about, so we're putting austerity, Brexit and ULEZ on our list then?
Yes.
Or congestion charges as well. I mean, Boris Johnson.
Congestion charges, maybe the Boris bikes. There was a time when he wasn't completely awful.
Yeah, okay, granted.
Did lead us down to
Other cities have got all of these things. Maybe that's the question we won't be able to answer, is the uniqueness of London on this field. But austerity, exactly. So if I hit these buttons, why the UK? What's specific to the UK? We've got austerity and Brexit. Why the last 10 years we've got austerity and Brexit, and then what is it that we do differently from other countries? That those are not going to be specific to the last 10 years, but austerity and Brexit are going to have made them all worse.
Here's the other secret sauce, I think secret sauce, and I'm not sure how it ties in perfectly, but I think it does feed these other elements, is the amount of fake news and media and foreign influence in our media that other countries don't tend to have, because...
Why does that affect life expectancy?
Because if you can incentivize people to do bad things through, you know, telling them that this is what's happening...
angry, frightened people become less healthy?
I suspect so. Yes.
No, I know. I like this argument. I was just pushing you towards it to the full stop. And that actually. So the people who live in London. I mean, this is too good to be true from our perspective, Julian. The people who live in London are not angry and frightened of London because they live here and they know that it's great. Whereas the rest of the country has been brainwashed into thinking that London is a terrifying, dangerous place, and therefore their lives are shortening as a consequence of the stress, high blood pressure, and fear that they suffer from as a consequence of all the online liars and racists. I love it. I absolutely love it. I don't think it's going to necessarily touch the sides of the kind of statistical shifts that we're looking at, but it might be part of a much, much bigger problem. I mean, I wonder whether even the sort of choice of food that you have in London. So where I am in Brentford, which is a West London suburb, the Middle Eastern supermarket serves food at low prices and really good healthy stuff to the entire community. I'm not suggesting that no other cities or towns have Middle Eastern supermarkets, but you've got a lot more multiculturalism going on in London. And what this finding tells us is that other cultures are healthier than ours. So that could be part of it as well. Multiculturalism makes you live longer. Might be a helpful slogan. 29 minutes after 11 is the time. More on this, please. Especially if you can hit the London question. Because, you know, younger people are moving out of London. But technically, the healthier people are the ones that are moving on. And yet, healthy life expectancy in London is going up. There's going to be a slightly higher income threshold. But then the prices are higher as well. I do not understand why London is an anomaly on this. Unless you, Les, is actually that the biggest and most significant answer, in which case I think Sadiq Khan has owned a massive, massive apology by precisely the sort of racists and liars who populate social media telling us that London is an awful place to live. Here's David Don with your headlines.
Britain's ambassador to the US says all appropriate security measures are in place for the King's state visit this week. Buckingham Palace says the trip is going ahead as planned following the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner at the weekend. The Prime Minister is going to hold a COBRA meeting tomorrow to discuss the ongoing impact of the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer's warned the effects could be felt for some time. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister's also outlined plans to bring down retail crime. An extra 3,000 neighbourhood police officers are going to be put on the streets as he's promised to stop a shoplift free-for-all. LBC weather, some showers in the northeast, warm and sunny across the south, turning cloudy with some rain later, and a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
Georgie's up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Do you do cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Oh, two?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is a good news story for Londoners and a bad news story for everybody else, which is a little odd given that so much effort is currently being put into maligning and misrepresenting London as some sort of hellhole. Did I see one of Donald Trump's idiot sons joining in with this on some platform at the weekend. I mean, I'm not on Truth Social. I don't even know. I must have seen it. Someone must have picked it up and posted it on Blue Sky. Just this idea that London, J.D. Vance saying we've got a freedom of speech problem in this country. London has a peculiar set of issues. Well, why is healthy life expectancy going up in this city and going down everywhere else in the United Kingdom? And why is the United Kingdom going down when the rest of the world is going up, except for the countries that are going down, which are not going down as far or as fast as us? And Brexit, listen, I don't actually think I have to apologise anymore to people who voted for it and still don't realise the mistake that they made, because if you still don't realise the mistake that you made, you don't really deserve my apology or my respect anymore, because you are a traitor to this country's interests and to future generations. And that was forgivable in the immediate aftermath and in the context of the effort that was put in to persuading you that it was a good idea. But if you're still banging that drum now, then you are a traitor to your own children's future. And your life is getting shorter, partly as a consequence of what you were persuaded to do. So contempt for the con men, compassion for the conned has probably passed its expiry date now. The only thing that might be relevant, if you want to get really wonky about this, wonkish even, would be that because we no longer have lots of young people coming here to work for quite short periods of time before leaving again, that might bring down the overall healthy life expectancy, but I don't know how the statistics are measured. But do you see what I mean? Like, the gene pool is invigorated and refreshed by freedom of movement, because it is a movement of young people on their own coming here to work and then leaving. But you told them all to clear off. You told them all to go back where they came from. So they did. And that means that they have been replaced as a consequence of Boris Johnson's policies, in many cases, by people who won't come here to do the jobs that we won't do unless they can bring their family with them. And that might involve older people. So there could be a demographic explanation for this, which is also down to Brexit, but not in quite as obvious a way as some of the other things are as well. 11:35 is the time. Fiona is in Ascot. Fiona, what would you like to say?
Hi, yeah. Hello. I'm a chartered town planner.
Are there any uncharted town planners? Are there any rogue town planners going around the place planning towns without the qualifications?
Yes, definitely.
Carry on.
I have MRTPI after my name.
Glad to hear it.
No, I just thought I'd put the planning stance in, because I used to live in London. I lived in Wandsworth Borough. And I bought a flat in 2005, which is car-free, and it was quite sort of radical at the time to have a car-free development. So I was actually in newspapers and all sorts of things at the time. And public transport, I think, is just fantastic in London.
Yes, it is.
It's now 20 miles an hour pretty much anywhere, and that has to have a positive impact. Planning as well in London is, you've got your London plan. So London is looked at as regionally as well as individually by each council. And that doesn't happen outside of London. Well, certainly I'm in the southeast, I'm in Berkshire. And most planning applications, you know, you have to provide at least 3 cars for a house, and public transport is shocking.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. I mean, Londoners do not realise, particularly with public transport, it's unthinkable to people. So maybe in other cities there are some comparisons that hold water, but to people in smaller towns or even outside towns, public transport is an absolute lottery. Whereas for everybody within the M25, it means, because not only does it mean you leave the car at home, which makes the air that we're all breathing healthier, you also do a bit more walking as a consequence of using public transport, because you're walking to the station or the bus stop.
Yeah, and kids walk to school a bit more than they do out here. Makes my blood boil.
It should be the other way around, shouldn't it?
Because the number of children I see being driven to school, and of course they're then driven from a very young age, and that's all they then know and expect. Whereas if you can walk to your local school, then that has to be good for...
No, there's a theme emerging here. Of course it is. And there's a theme emerging here, and I'm not going to weld you to my political axe to grind. But the people who went mad about you, Les, and the people who go mad about Sadiq Khan are the same people who went mad about, what were they called, 20-minute somethings. The idea that you should be able to walk to all amenities that you need within 20 minutes. And that's a bad thing, according to these weirdos. Like, literally, 15-minute cities, they were called. So everything is within a 15-minute walk. And they were going nuts about that. I mean, I think there was a big anti-vax contingent to those people as well. So, you know, they like COVID. They want everyone to be more likely to die and suffer from COVID. They want everybody to be rejecting opportunities to walk more. They want, I mean, it's, I don't want clean air. I mean, if Vladimir Putin was influencing these people, they could hardly be more diametrically opposed to British interests, could they? And London is the epicentre of all of these things.
Yeah.
I tell you how we could... No, I love it. It might also be all the halal food as well that's available in London as well. That's almost certainly contributing to longer life expectancy. That halal food and Shakira law are obviously the reasons why people in London can expect to live longer. I stole that joke off Habib. Fair play to you, Habib. I've got to stop stealing things without crediting the original contributors. 11:38 is the time. Eddie's in Salford. Eddie, what do you reckon?
It's interesting because I think a lot of it is down to the amount of disposable income that people have got.
Do you?
I'm living in the north and I've got family in Brighton.
Yeah.
I go down to Brighton and it's chalk and cheese. The amount of disposable income there is phenomenal. Every other person has got a Volvo, not a Volvo, an Audi or something like that.
Well, that's statistically not true. But you might say, so you see more Audis in Brighton than you do in Salford. But, I mean, to be fair, we're not even talking about Brighton, but you're talking about the southeast in general.
Yes.
Okay.
The thing is, if you compare disposable incomes in different parts of the country... obviously, up in the north, it was a very industrialised area. All those jobs have gone. The average salary that people earn here now, in where I live, is less than in 1986 because people had national pay scales, which were all taken away with the union.
But why then? So there's three questions here. I mean, Brighton isn't part of them, but we'll allow Brighton to be a satellite of London for the purposes of the point.
Listen, I was in London over the weekend, so we can go with London.
So more disposable income, and why does that mean you live longer?
You eat more healthily. You know the opportunities for spending money in gyms and whatever. Loads of people here can't afford it.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair enough. It could be that.
The rent, it was under Thatcher that we moved to national, away from national pay scales. So people get paid less in regional areas. But the cost of
26%, 2 million Londoners live in poverty. It's got the highest poverty rate in England, mate.
Yeah.
So that doesn't work, does it?
Well, I don't know.
It's the highest in the country. The poverty rate here is the highest in the country, and the life expectancy is going up while the rest of the country goes down.
Yeah. But
I've just completely exploded your theory.
No, not really.
Yes, I am.
No.
26% of the population live in poverty. It's the highest poverty level in the country, and our healthy life expectancy is going up while everybody else's is going down. So it's not about poverty.
Well, I think...
Lots of vegans in Brighton. That could be it.
Well, there's lots of vegans up in the north, and I'm one of them. You know, and the opportunities that you've got for eating healthily out here are completely different from
down south. Not if you're living in poverty. You've got no opportunities, really, for eating out. It's simply not an option. So, listen, I mean, it's elements of what you say, but they don't answer the key questions that we're asking. Why the last 10 years... Why has that been so key and so crucial? Why does the UK do so much worse than other countries that suffer from some of the same political movements that you describe? And why is London moving in the opposite direction from the rest of the country? Thank you, Eddie. Richard is in Upminster. Richard, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. Yeah, I think it's helpful to look through the lens of this work on the blue zones. And they say that health is, you know, a result of your culture, your community and your connection and not just medicine. So if you look at it through the lens of what has happened to us that has damaged our sense of community and shared purpose, you know, as human beings, that has a lot of impacts on our, you know, our neurophysiology and our, you know, cortisol, all these lovely chemicals we talk about. So I think when you look at austerity, divisive politics, you know, isolation, inequality, you find that that's what's going on. We have our community and our sense of sharedness has been eroded.
And we, many people live under the tyranny of algorithms that reward content that makes them more stressed and makes them more angry and makes them more frightened. And I mean, I don't know what population of the country is having its brains boiled by Facebook or by Twitter or by TikTok, but they're certainly influencing the broader discourse and the broader conversation, which will affect people who aren't even on these platforms. But why would London get a free pass then? Because, or not a free pass, but why would London be moving in the opposite direction while many people might think it was more susceptible to what you described than other parts of the country?
I think it's much denser, and so it's not wealth. It's not if you're rich, you can go to the gym. It's the wealth inequality, because I think it's Kensington and Chelsea where there's a life expectancy variation of 20 years between rich and poor. And you know, this is the sort of thing you'd see in India. I mean, I used to live with it. That extremeness. And so London's more sort of dense in terms of its social networks, its community. And by the way, its diversity.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, this is from Mark in Teesside. A bigger ethnic minority base, so you're more likely to have close-knit families who eat together, home-cooked meals, clearly more healthy than other options, and everybody eating them together. I hadn't thought of that. Could you think that could be relevant?
Yeah, and actually, as you said earlier, people that move around more and think less have less mental health problems. So people in London are actually moving around more and are probably you know, don't have the cars. So look at it through the lens of what is it that affects our sense of community and shared purpose, and you kind of get pretty close to the answer, I think.
Certainly one of the big parts of the answer, one of the bigger jigsaw pieces. It's extraordinary to think how completely at odds with the overriding discourse this is, you know, whether you're looking at social media or whether you're looking at traditional media. I think we'll do a quick unhinged headline, actually, because I mentioned the abuse that Sadiq Khan receives, despite now being the thrice elected mayor of the only part of this country where healthy life expectancy is going up. But here's very much a qualification or a contender for.
Unhinged headline.
I read this headline twice before I understood what was going on. Child abuse charity attacks Khan for allowing naked bike ride. Okay, point one, why Khan? Why not Mayor of London or Sadiq Khan? Can't open a right-wing newspaper these days without seeing the word Kemi in a headline without any accompanying Badenoch. So there's a dehumanising element to it. There's a he is the enemy element to this headline. And then you think, what's he got to do with naked bike rides? I'm pretty sure that in London, where healthy life expectancy is going up compared to the rest of the country while it's going down, I'm pretty sure this bike ride has been running for over two decades. I remember it running when Boris Johnson was... I think we did jokes on the programme about hoping he didn't join in, because nobody would want to see that. So there's a headline here claiming that there is a naked bike ride that is Sadiq Khan's fault, and they've managed to get the words child abuse into the headline as well. And then I read this story, and I was right. The annual bike ride through the capital has been running since 2004. The decision on whether or not to allow it is taken by the Metropolitan Police, not the Mayor of London. And the desperation that the Daily Telegraph had to get the words child abuse, Khan and naked into a headline isn't just unhinged, it's positively perverted. But thank goodness nobody respectable would fall into that particular trap. There is, though, today's
unhinged headline.
It's 11:46. Simon Marks is next.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
I should not have appointed Peter Mandelson, and I apologise again to the victims of the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, who were clearly failed by my decision.
Hear every side of the story.
Keir Starmer is completely devoid of curiosity. He never asks questions. He has no interest in inquiring about anything.
It shouldn't be on the Prime Minister to then doubt and second-guess every single official.
I'm paying a third more in fuel costs to fill my vehicle.
Do you feel like asking much of a luxury now to heat your house?
I had to increase the rent quite considerably. And it's a choice between, you know, do I eat tonight or don't I eat tonight?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Did you cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Two.
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
11:49 is the time. I you know what a miserable git I can be sometimes. I like to think I'm a more mellow character than I was when we first met, but I do occasionally have little bugbears. And this was one of them until suddenly it wasn't. When we started doing the catch-up service, when was that, Keith, roughly? When did we start doing the listen back and you could listen to the show and rewind live radio and all of that sort of malarkey? And I started getting messages from people who were listening an hour ago. And they'd say, oh, I'm listening on catch-up, but... And I'm like, why do you think I want to know what your reaction was to something that happened an hour ago that I'm not talking about anymore? I think, what is wrong with you? But then, oddly, as time has passed, I've come to quite enjoy these messages from the past. And Tom has just sent me one. He says, I'm listening on behind today's show now, James. So you're sort of automatically thinking, why are you getting in touch with me to contribute to a conversation that's ended? But then I realise it's about connection and community, kindness and family. Tom wants me to know what he thinks. He says, I think Starmer wants the king to be insulted. This will force the media and his opposition in the UK to rally around him and label Trump as an enemy. This will help Starmer move towards the EU and away from the USA, and it will force Farage, etc., to break away from Trump or to be seen as not patriotic. So they will lose some of their cards. I think in a sane universe, I'd agree with that. But it's not a sane universe. And, of course, things got even more troubling over the course of this weekend with events in Washington at the press gala, which is one of the reasons why Simon Marks joins us. I think we've used the word extraordinary 670,000 times when discussing events in the United States of America in the last 18 months. But this is one of those occasions when there is no other word, really. Extraordinary and rather horrible, Simon.
Yes, and I think perhaps in a bizarre way, James, inevitable. I mean, given what we now know about the extraordinarily lax security that was in place around that Hilton Hotel on Saturday night. I mean, and in a way also lucky that something far worse did not occur, because you have to remember that at that event on Saturday night, you basically had the entire line of succession and the president all in a basement ballroom of a massive concrete structure above them. And it is already apparent that the suspect in this case, who's going to be making his first court appearance here a little bit later today, had absolutely no difficulty whatsoever bringing his weapons into that hotel a little bit earlier in the week, booking a room in the hotel after traveling from California to Washington, D.C., via Chicago. And in the words of the Wall Street Journal, which has done an extraordinary job overnight of really probing what was taking place security-wise at that hotel, it was easier to get into the dinner than many big sports events and concert venues. They also quote Jason Pack, a former FBI official, who says that the suspect didn't beat the security plan the night of the dinner. He beat it the day he made the hotel reservation, which is just an absolutely staggering revelation. Now, the suspect, clearly, from everything that we have read about him and everything that we are learning hour after hour, his own writings that were apparently sent to family members, to his employers, left in the hotel room, some of them, clearly indicate a deeply troubled individual who was critical of the Trump administration, who made claims against the Trump administration, accusing some of its senior figures of sexual crimes, and then, of course, made that extraordinary effort to charge through the metal detectors that were the only metal detectors in place and were only being used to screen people who were trying to get to the dinner in the basement that at the time was already underway with 2,000 people there. He never stood a chance of getting off the ground floor of the hotel. He never stood a chance of getting to the ballroom. But it is also apparent from the lax security that existed that a much more coordinated, planned, and well-orchestrated effort to attack that hotel at a time when America has no shortage of enemies on the world stage and is at war could have potentially wiped out the president, the vice president, the speaker of the House of Representatives, and two of the next people out of the first six people in that line of succession. Wow. So there are major questions here. And, you know, this idea that security was reviewed for the royal visit, well, of course it was. And President Trump is saying, well, but it's all going to be okay because they're coming to the White House and that's the most secure facility in the city. And, oh, and by the way, this underscores the need for us to build the ballroom. Doesn't, of course, underscore the need for us as a country to engage in any serious commentary or discussion about gun control. We immediately go to, we need to build the ballroom because it's going to be more secure than the Hilton Hotel up the road. I mean, that only goes so far, given the public engagements outside the White House that the King and Queen will be engaging in here in Washington, D.C., in New York, in Virginia, and then back in Washington between now and Thursday. So massive questions arising out of what took place on Saturday night.
Are there any answers? I've been struck, you may have been across this already, but as I was reading into the events of Saturday night, and of course links present themselves to other reports, and I hadn't realised how widespread and how deep the conviction was that the last assassination attempt on Donald Trump was some sort of false flag or some sort of conspiracy theory. That's really taken hold in MAGA circles. That's not, I mean, one wouldn't expect it necessarily from liberals or critics of Donald Trump, but his own fan base seemed to believe increasingly that was some sort of fake. This is more grist to the conspiracy theory mill, isn't it?
Oh, I think we are going to look back on this event over the weekend at the point at which the conspiracy theory mill in this country went completely mainstream. I mean, if you take a look at the hundreds, possibly by now this morning, thousands of comments that have been attached to our own YouTube channel, yeah, the LBC official YouTube channel, and some of the coverage that we provided over the weekend of the attack, the attempted attack on that Hilton hotel, and therefore on the dinner down in the basement. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a single person who has added a comment to that YouTube channel that believes that this was anything other than a hoax. Now, in order to believe that it was a hoax, you also have to believe that in some way it was in President Trump's interest to throw the Klieg lights back on the issue of Jeffrey Epstein, yeah. because in the writings of this gunman, he talks about his outrage at policies put in place by the White House and alludes to allegations of sexual misconduct, saying he is no longer willing to allow a traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. He doesn't use Donald Trump's name, but take a listen to what happened on CBS 60 Minutes last night when Donald Trump was being interviewed by Nora O'Donnell.
He also wrote this: I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. What's your reaction
to
that?
Well, I was waiting for you to read that because I knew you would, because you're horrible people. Horrible people. Yeah, he did write that. I'm not a rapist. I didn't rape anybody.
Do you think he was referring to you?
Excuse me. I'm not a pedophile. You read that crap from some sick person. I got associated with all stuff that has nothing to do with me. I was totally exonerated. Your friends on the other side of the plate are the ones that were involved with, let's say, Epstein or other things. But I said to myself, you know, I'll do this interview and they'll probably, I read the manifesto, you know, he's a sick person, but you should be ashamed of yourself reading that, because I'm not any of those things.
Mr. President,
and I was never,
excuse me,
you shouldn't be reading that on 60 Minutes. You're a disgrace, but go ahead, let's finish the interview.
Now, if you believe that this whole thing was a hoax, you also have to believe that on the eve of the King and Queen arriving in the UK, in the United States, President Trump wanted to find himself on television denying that he is a rapist or a paedophile. And that is, even for a conspiracy theorist, that's a massive stretch. But you're absolutely right to talk about the revival of conversation about what happened in Butler, Pennsylvania, that first assassination attempt. Even Tucker Carlson and his brother, in that podcast where Tucker Carlson breaks entirely with Donald Trump, found themselves discussing the Butler assassination attempt and suggesting that it needs another look, intimating that perhaps it was not what it was portrayed to be at the time.
And the irony is, of course, that Trump has done more than anybody to create this ecosystem where conspiracy theories can flourish. He still lies through his teeth about the results of the election that Joe Biden won. Those lies seem to be coming back into the light again now, and he continues to spread all sorts of nonsense and conspiracy theories about all sorts of people. So, I mean, it's ironic, but it's also dangerous.
Yes, very dangerous. I mean, he is clearly hoist on his own petard at this point, because people across the political spectrum, and remember the conspiracy theorists, if you drew a Venn diagram between MAGA supporters and conspiracy theorists, you'd find quite an intersection there. But now conspiracy theories are being embraced by Donald Trump's critics, partly on the basis that, well, you know, you put conspiracy theories into the public domain, what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. But what this really means, ultimately, is that those commentators out there who say, even now, we're going to view the two terms that President Trump spent in office as an aberration, and that in some fashion, once this is all over, America is going to snap back to some semblance of normalcy. That is going to be very difficult in a post-truth country, which this already largely was, where now conspiracy theories fueled by the ability of AI to create instant images, as people were doing on Saturday night after the dinner, entirely false storylines being promoted by the use of AI-created videos, it takes the country down an unbelievably dangerous path.
And he has shown the way. I mean, he has kicked those doors down through which the entire country now passes, as you point out, Simon, without any guarantees of an easy return to how things were before. No doubt we'll be speaking to you. The best thing that can happen in the context of the royal visit is nothing, right? The best thing that can happen is that I talk to you tomorrow or on Wednesday and say, any big events, anything notable? Has he done a Pearl Harbor? Has he done a Zelensky? And you just go, no, it's all gone off quite calmly, really.
The only way this is a win over the next 4 days is if it is rancor-free and President Trump does not talk to or is not goaded into talking to some of the propagandists here, many of whom have White House press passes, who will constantly be seeking to ask him whether he'd like to take a pop at the Prime Minister while the King is on American soil.
Or his own son.
If we get through the next...
Yeah, or Harry. They might, because they brought Harry into it recently as well,
haven't
they?
Absolutely, yes, exactly.
Wow. So Simon Marks there, almost wishing that he doesn't have anything to report on in the course of the next 4 days in Washington, D.C. I'm torn. So, good for business, bad for the soul. It's 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Donald Trump insists the King and Queen will be very safe during their state visit this week. Security talks between the White House and Buckingham Palace are ongoing after a gunman targeted an event the President attended on Saturday. It's understood minor adjustments are being made after Saturday's shooting. Former intelligence analyst Julian Richards says it's important the trip goes ahead.
The British authorities will have been working very closely with the American authorities to get all the plans and procedures and protocols in place. It's important. He's been invited. It could help to repair relations in some ways, given the difficult experience the relations have had in recent times.
Charles and Camilla will arrive in Washington, D.C. for their 4-day visit this evening. A 26th arrest has been made by police investigating a series of attacks on Jewish sites in London. A 37-year-old man's been detained in Devon. Counter-terror teams are investigating a series of attacks over the past month. The Prime Minister says he'll chair a meeting of the government's emergency committee tomorrow to discuss the ongoing impact on the UK of the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer says members of the Bank of England will join to talk about the effects from rising oil costs. He suggested prices could remain high for a while due to the conflict.
The truth is, the economic consequences could still be with us for some time. You don't need to be a politician to know that. You can see it on every petrol forecourt across the country. Because what Iran shows is that, once again, events happening miles away from Britain have the capacity to hurt our living standards, our future, and our security.
The Prime Minister was speaking at a shop workers' union's conference where he's promised to put a stop to a shoplifting free-for-all. He's outlined previously announced measures, including an increase in neighbourhood policing and scrapping immunity for lower value thefts. And 2 in 3 primary school children say they would like to spend more time learning languages. Research from the British Council found nearly 70% also said they want to keep studying as they grow older. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 22 points at 10,401. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, some showers in the northeast, warm and sunny across the south, turning cloudy with some rain later, and highs of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm David Dom.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 12 is the time, and a conversation next that we could have had towards the end of last week, but we didn't. And part of the reason for that was because I wasn't quite sure what route into this story to take. I got a text earlier today that speaks to precisely that point. Is it just me, James, that is very extremely alarmed by what has been happening in Epsom? In a middle-class area of Epsom, we have had riots over more fake news of an immigrant gang raping a woman. A man has been convicted of raping a Sikh woman after mistaking her for a Muslim woman. Our direction of travel has gone so far that under a future Nigel Farage government, the future of Muslims will no longer be in the UK. I'm actively trying to leave this country now with my family. My cousin's sister is moving to Qatar as she no longer feels safe here. And the reason for this is quite possibly something that you will not be aware of. And I find that extraordinary. I don't know where you get your news from, but if you rely upon me for it, you won't be aware of this. Despite the fact that I wasn't... the riots that my texter is referring to, I felt were almost certainly inappropriate, given that the police do not deliberately keep information from raging mobs for fear of maligning people of colour or immigrants. It's one of the worst racist lies that's out there. If we learned anything from the hideous reaction to the hideous murders in Southport, it was that some deeply dangerous and despicable people will spread all manner of lies on social media if they think that it will help inflame a mob. You had Nigel Farage treating the serial criminal and race provocateur, I forget who he was treating with. Well, no, it wasn't, was it? It was the other fellow. It was the alleged rapist. Andrew Tate was being cited as a reliable source by Nigel Farage in the process of stoking up the levels of anger and hatred that saw a Nigel Farage fan call for people to be burnt in their beds in a hotel. Entirely innocent people. This is what we have created. This is where the algorithms are. That Epsom story that my texter refers to prompted two outbreaks of rioting in Epsom, and only towards the end of last week did it emerge that no crime had been committed at all. Not that no crime had been committed by asylum seekers, or no crime had been committed by immigrants, or no crime had been committed by Muslims, but no crime had been committed at all. It is as if not just that we learned nothing from the Farage riots in the aftermath of the Southport murders, but it is almost as if some people did learn that there is money to be made or attention to be accrued or trouble to be caused by acting upon misinformation or misinterpretation. People taking to the streets of our country to riot and to hurl abuse and projectiles at police officers because social media clowns have created a lie that the police are deliberately covering something up. 3 days after the initial police appeal for information, this is quite an extraordinary state of affairs. The idea that people had been silenced under threat of arrest is a lie that was perpetrated on social media. The idea that there had been some sort of shady establishment cover-up is a lie that had been perpetrated on social media. The idea that the police were keeping the ethnicity of the suspects from the public for fear of, I don't know what, riots, was a lie that was perpetrated by racist liars on social media. The idea that refugees were involved was a lie perpetrated by racist liars on social media. The idea that migrants were suspected or had been identified by the victim was a lie perpetrated by liars and racists on social media. And of course, when the riots happened, you got the usual hand-wringing from people who would once have thought twice about doing this sort of thing, about the legitimate concerns of people. If you had to guess which politicians stuck their oar in, despite the fact that it was all a lie perpetrated by racist liars on social media, you would probably put Honest Bob Jenrick fairly near the top of the list, and you'd be absolutely bloody right. Because what was really confusing about this story for me, and the reason why I chose not to cover it at the time, was because it seemed to all hinge upon a belief that the police would act in a disgraceful and dishonest fashion. That the police were asking for the public's help in identifying the perpetrators of an alleged crime, while simultaneously lying about what they already knew about the perpetrators of an alleged crime. It seemed to me to be a conspiracy theory of such boneheaded blatancy that I couldn't believe anybody took either the claims or the riot seriously. But I forgot where I live. I live in Brexit Britain. I live in a country where Nigel Farage is leading the national opinion polls prior to the next general election. I live in a country where the racist liars have taken over the asylum, particularly on social media. I live in a country where the woman who called for people to be burned alive in hotels ends up being greeted on the stage at the Reform UK party conference like some sort of conquering heroine. That's the country that we live in. So when it turns out that the poor woman involved in these allegations was not happily a victim of any crime, it gets approximately 4% of the coverage that the racist lies accompanying the original story received. I don't know how you turn this oil tank around. I wasn't even sure that we were going to talk about it today until A, I got that text, and B, Simon Marks reminded us that even when the perpetrators of conspiracy theories and lies have moved on, we are left with the ecosystem that they have created. Donald Trump finds himself now surrounded by former admirers and supporters who are convinced that he is staging his own assassination attempts because he has killed truth. He has broken objective reality. He has deployed phrases like fake news or alternative facts to describe the truth. So how can you possibly blame his acolytes, admirers, observers and supporters for choosing what is true and what is not, for making reality a matter of choice? And if you are a racist liar and you've turned it into a lucrative online career, you don't care what's true or not. You certainly don't care about this poor woman in Epsom. You care only about how you can maximise your attention and your income by spreading racist lies. And that's where we find ourselves today. So the question, and I think the right question, a couple of articles I'd recommend that you read. Ian Birrell writing in the iPaper under the headline, "The Epsom Riots Are a Dark Warning of Where Britain Is Headed." Because as he correctly points out, these racist liars call themselves patriots even as they tear up street furniture and attack the police on the streets of our country. And the BBC put a very detailed account of events together under the headline, "The Crime That Never Happened and Sparked a Rage Bait Frenzy." And people like Honest Bob Jenrick and some broadcasters and journalists should know better than to cover these events as if they are being undertaken in good faith. The most cursory research on this case would just have put a big enough question mark in your mind for you to think that this isn't... And then you put a call into the police, you get a steer from the police on what's going on, and either you join the conspiracy theorists and racist liars in believing that the police are keeping the truth from the people, or you realise that this is a story that you probably shouldn't be allowing the tail to wag the dog, the racist lying tail to wag the dog of media coverage. So, I want you to talk to me now about the decision of the British police to announce, declare, decide that it would reveal the ethnicity of suspects in criminal cases. Because I don't know what to think about that, and some of the police officers who have explained why it is a good idea have seemed to me to be very persuasive indeed. And yet, for me, this story cuts both ways. This story is either proof that it's a good idea or proof that it's a bad idea. And I want a little bit of help from you this morning in identifying which one it is. Which one it is. Because if you are expecting the ethnicity to be released and then it isn't, the racist liars who populate the social media platforms that create these sort of scenarios, whether with or without the help of people like Nigel Farage, who was instrumental, of course, in the Southport riots, but I think it was his sort of weird little mini-me, Honest Bob Jenrick, who piled in on this one when no crime at all had been committed, let alone a crime that was being attributed to a Muslim small boat migrant when, in fact, it was a Welsh-born Christian. I still don't know whether it's a good idea or not for the police to have announced that they would, because what does it do if it's a white rapist? Do these people calm down? If some poor woman were to be raped by a white man, and they are preparing to man the barricades at the first report of the rape, and then the police reveal that the person in custody is white, they all pack up and go home. I mean, I'm right, aren't I? That's what happened. That's what this story is about. That's what this story proves. There would be no riots on the streets of Epsom over a sexual assault that had taken place in the way that almost all sexual assaults do, in the home perpetrated by a man known to the victim. There'd be no riots about that. I don't know if there were any riots about the other story that my texter referred to, about the poor woman, the poor Sikh woman whose rapist was convicted last week, who literally and deliberately and openly raped her because he thought she was a Muslim. I don't know if it helps or not to have this new policy in place where the ethnicity is announced, because I'm a very weird creature in 2026 in Brexit Britain, is that I don't feel differently when a woman is raped or when a child is abused according to the colour of the perpetrator. I don't get angrier or sadder or more disgusted when they're brown or black or white or purple than I do when they're not. I don't sit here and hear the story of a disgusting crime being perpetrated against an innocent victim and think to myself, oh, I wonder what colour the criminal is. Or I wonder how long they've lived in this country, or I wonder whether they were born here or not. It doesn't affect my heartbreak, my disgust and my fear to learn that the perpetrator looks or doesn't look like me. And I don't think the average victim cares particularly either. I don't know, and I wouldn't deign to speak for them, but it seems to me unlikely. So, two questions. Would these riots, we could call them the Jenrick riots, I suppose, as a successor to the Farage riots that followed the Southport racist lies, would these riots have happened if the police were not committed to revealing the ethnicity of suspects? I mean, the problem is you're imputing or you're talking about very, very hard of thinking people in a way that presumes that they're capable of thinking, because what the police have said they will do is reveal whether somebody who has been arrested or somebody who is in custody is of a certain ethnicity. What, actually, let's go back a little bit further. What is that designed to achieve? 03456060973. What is that designed to achieve? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Is it the right thing to do? I mean, you're probably going to answer the second question in the course of answering the first question, aren't you? And all of this contingent upon the idea that these riots are a direct consequence of the policy. And the BBC report looks at some of the actors on social media sharing clips of the protest and claiming all of Britain backs these patriots. Half a million users saw that. It's an illustration of how these posts are prioritised by some algorithm, so that the accounts posting them, who we discovered recently are usually not in this country anyway, are making money from what is best described as stochastic terrorism. Online misinformation resulting in offline harm and violence. Anti-immigration misinformation in particular has an increasingly high chance of turning violent. So, does this give us pause on the question of whether it is the right thing to do? And in order to answer that question, we have to go back to the why. The why of it. Is it... Is it pandering to racist liars to give them what they want, in the sense of, oh, yes, this suspect is actually brown-skinned, or this suspect is actually black or brown or Muslim or something, therefore we are going to react differently? What role does the information play? Because it could have a diffusing role, but I don't see how. If they'd come out with the Southport killing, the murderer in Southport, whose name I won't allow to pass my lips on this programme, but if they'd come out and said, imagine, because I said to you at the time, what if a crime is committed. And they are. Asylum seekers commit crimes. Capricorns commit crimes. Pisces people commit crimes. Men commit crimes. Women commit crimes. Manchester United supporters commit crimes. Kidderminster Harriers supporters commit crimes. Asylum seekers commit crimes. People who can trace their lineage in this country back to the Doomsday Book commit crimes. Some of those crimes are hideous. So if they'd come out in the aftermath of the killings in Southport, those poor little girls, and said, yes, actually, it is an asylum seeker, and he did arrive in Dover on a small boat last Tuesday, would the riots have become more or less likely to happen? Because it's possible that they would have become less likely, and this is where I want you to help me out. Because you can sit here and say you're appeasing racist liars, you're responding to online misinformation, you're making everything more dangerous. But usually, if the police had come out and said it is an asylum seeker who had committed this crime, then the racist liars making money online would have had to pack up and go home because they couldn't claim that they were being lied to, or they couldn't claim that they were being misled. But then, you see, you get a story like this, where a young woman has, I mean, according to the police, a young woman has sustained a serious head injury and made a report of a crime that never actually happened. Something that was established fairly quickly by dint of CCTV and door knocking and investigating and doing all the things that you expect the police for all their flaws to do, unless you are a racist liar, perfectly prepared to malign the police in pursuit of money and status online, which spills over quickly into violence and abuse on the streets of our country. If the police haven't got any suspects in mind and they haven't got good descriptions, then they can't give them to the public. And the Stephen Yaxley Lennon fans pop up on social media claiming that we're being lied to. So what's the least bad option here? If you release the ethnicity of suspects, you quell Farage riots. But if you can't release the ethnicity of subjects, you cause generic riots. Have I got that right? Does that sound right to you? If the police reveal ethnicity, then riots like the ones prompted by Nigel Farage and others after Southport are less likely to happen. But if you can't reveal ethnicity, but the public expect you to, but you genuinely can't, as happened in this case, then riots like the ones prompted by Honest Bob Jenrick and others on this occasion become perhaps inevitable. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. Should the police be doing this, and why? Remind me why they are doing it. It's 12:25. Good Lord, I didn't realise I had so much to say about that. Apologies.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
Notice the change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Coulthard.
And I'm Jolie Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Did you cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Two?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
26 minutes after 12 is the time. It's an extraordinary state of affairs, isn't it, that we can have riots on our streets, that are effectively stoked or encouraged by prominent politicians and reported in good faith by prominent broadcasters and journalists, but which are built upon racist lies perpetrated online about a crime that never even existed. I'll double check Honest Bob Jenrick's contribution to this discourse before I read it to you, and I'll leave you to decide whether or not he's apologised or withdrawn the comments he made at the time. But it seems to me that the decision of the police to speak of the ethnicity of suspects in cases is questionable. It might be the right thing to do, but it might be the wrong thing to do. And I want you to tell me which of those two you think it is. Robin is in Hartford. Robin, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. How are you doing?
Brian, I don't like this
crazy
story.
Crazy times, eh?
Yes, it is a crazy, it is crazy times, but I don't know that. But anyway, you tell me why you rang in.
I rang in because, I mean, this sort of kind of incenses me, and it just makes me really, really sad.
Yes.
Of where we got to. I mean, purely this. I honestly believe this is a thing or a move by the police to try and defuse sort of Southport or Epsom, these situations, in the hope of trying to do that.
But we can prove to you that we're not keeping information from you by giving you this information. But the people accusing you of keeping information from them are not good faith actors.
I know. But the thing is that You then ask, would it carry on,
yeah,
you know, if it was a group of... And I think, sadly, it would. I mean, maybe not on the same sort of scale. I mean, if people, you know, feel... Because, I mean, the social media starts off by saying, oh, look, it's probably asylum seekers, but they're lying to you. So that's where people get het up and all the usual racists come out, blah, 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 blah. But if they were to say, well, look, it is an asylum seeker, you probably still would get demonstrations, but maybe less heated. I don't know. And it's really sad, to be honest. I mean, I think that...
So if let's spend a moment, if we must, in the mind of that Lucy Connolly woman who called for the hotels to be set fire to, despite the fact that nobody believed anybody in those hotels had been responsible for any crime. So if the police in the Northwest had come out and said the man under arrest is an asylum seeker and was arrested at a repurposed hotel where he'd been staying, would those people become more or less likely to call for hotels to be set fire? So would we have collective punishment and pogroms?
I think less likely.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I mean, but the problem is I'm not sure either. And I think this is just a desperate measure by, you know, the police or the authorities to see if by doing this they can lower the temperature somewhat. But I think it's outrageous, quite frankly. And I think they should just put their foot down and go, no. And if these riots occur, I mean, just go in and batter these people, quite frankly. You know, I mean, it's like they're breaking the law, aren't they?
Police turn up with their riot shields and get bottles and what have you thrown at them for their trouble, while all they are doing is trying to contain riots that have been caused by online lies and exacerbated by prominent politicians and members of my
profession. I know, but look at the sort of the online sphere or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's impossible to deal with these people, isn't it? It's impossible to stop.
I wonder.
This.
You see, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, don't know. So best case scenario is not going to be peace on our streets. It is going to be a dialing down or a diminution of the number of violent outbreaks. So every time a terrible crime is reported, whether it actually happened or not, the police are required to confirm or deny that it was asylum seekers. If you're unfortunate enough to be the victim of sexual abuse or violence or God forbid, rape that has been committed by somebody who's definitely not an asylum seeker, unlucky. You're just not going to get the attention, the coverage, the outrage that that other people will get. That's the world that has been created by these people. But what is the most likely path to peaceful streets? Having a rule in place that will usually see the nationality or ethnicity of the suspect on arrest revealed, or not? Because this particular case, no one had been arrested. Everybody's lying. Everybody's lying. There's not a scintilla of truth here that they've built upon to create a lie. They have just lied from the start. A woman alleges a gang rape. Everything that followed is lies. And it turns out that the poor woman in the first place wasn't telling the truth. So, why this rule? And has it made things better or worse, given that we've now seen a generic riot, which we set on the scales opposite the Farage riots that we saw after Southport. 12:31 is the time. Matt Hewitt is here now with your headlines.
Britain's ambassador to the US says all appropriate security measures are in place for the King's state visit starting this evening. Buckingham Palace says the trip is going ahead as planned, though LBC understands there are modest adjustments on one or two engagements following the shooting at the White House correspondents' dinner. Sir Keir Starmer says Bank of England representatives will join an emergency COBRA meeting tomorrow to discuss the impact of the war in Iran. He says the economic consequences of the conflict could be felt for some time, with a key trading route effectively closed. And Sir Keir's claiming the tide could be turning against shoplifting. The Prime Minister says shop thefts are slightly down, and he wants wider use of technology, allowing the immediate sharing of CCTV with the police. LBC weather. Showers into this evening for parts of England and Scotland. Highs today of 21 degrees.
LBC. Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Daddy, cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of hemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics. And options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:34 is the time. Here it is. This is Honest Bob Jenrick. Surrey police must share what they can about the horrific rape in Epsom last weekend. After the Southport attack, the authorities were silent. Nigel Farage and myself called this out, as did Jonathan Hall KC. That's not actually a fully accurate representation of what Jonathan Hall KC said and did at the time, but he's not called Honest Bob Jenrick for nothing. Their silence made a bad situation worse. In light of this, police guidance on information sharing was updated. Disinformation, this is a quote, and incorrect narratives can take hold in a vacuum. It is good police work for us to fill this vacuum, end quotes. People also have a right to know what's happened in their area, and sharing information can only help with any investigation. Surrey police must communicate ASAP. The British people deserve transparency. Barely a cigarette paper between him and the serial jailbird Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, who prefers to be known as Tommy Robinson. He started praising patriots for demanding answers in wake of what he called deafening silence from police, claiming that Epsom locals had destroyed a suspected property, quotes, used for housing unvetted fighting-age invaders at the taxpayers' expense. All nonsense. Honest Bob Jenrick is a member of Parliament. He's a former Conservative, and it is indeed the Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner for Surrey, Lisa Townsend, who revealed that the investigation conducted by the police was exemplary and fast in the face of disinformation spread by people like her former party colleague, Honest Bob Jenrick. Her words, quotes, not about him specifically, I don't think, who really should have known an awful lot better. This is the point, they do know better. And she concluded, this is the Surrey Police and Crime Commissioner, and of course that is what caused the riots. So the police cannot reveal any identifying characteristics about any suspects because there wasn't any crime. But nobody knows that until the investigation has been completed. Yaxley Lennon acolytes and Nigel Farage fans pop up in social media spaces to spread racist lies. And I just don't know whether the police's policy of revealing the ethnicity of people under arrest is going to make things better or worse. Ranjit is in Croydon. Ranjit, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hope you're okay.
I'm good, yeah.
I just wanted to mention, I think this is a general lack of trust, I think, probably between the public and government agencies, including, I suppose, especially the police. Yeah. And I think it runs across the spectrum in terms of, I think, there was a lack of transparency in terms of what happened in Rotterdam, for example, as to into the rape cases, which is very, very unfortunately horrendous, really. And there was a perception that certain things were not investigated based on ethnicity. And that got publicized hugely. And I think a lot of government agencies were involved in there, social services, the police, possibly some politicians, we don't know. But because of it, I think there is now a mistrust that certain ethnicities or certain people are not investigated correctly. But I'd like to add there's also a different element to it in terms of it's the other way around as well. For example, I think there was a Manchester airport attack where the police were not trusted, even though they were the ones who were attacked. And there was at least a social media riot as such where the police were kind of had to publicize as to what really happened completely.
But none of your examples involve white perpetrators.
There is. So, for example, I think there's a Wimbledon car accident recently.
That's still very much under investigation and fits into a completely different category, I think, of event, and as I say, it's still very much a live case. The kind of people who are taking to the streets of Epsom, I don't think are particularly exercised or disgusted by crimes that are not committed by suspected asylum seekers or immigrants. I'm not aware, Ranjit, of any sort of online lynch mob being marshalled to go after people that look like me.
I agree. And I think it's just a reflection of what's happening overall. And I completely agree that there should be no ethnic element at all. It shouldn't be revealed. There's no need as long as there is a fair investigation. I think there's a mistrust, and that's possibly why.
And it's been carefully. Its beginnings might be justified, but it gets embellished and exaggerated for political reasons by precisely the sort of people that we're discussing today. In the great scheme of things, then, when you take a step back from recent events in Epsom or historic events in other English towns, does the change of policy from the police to specifically consider disclosing the nationality and or ethnicity of a suspect under arrest, does it turn the temperature of the country up or down?
It would, based on current events, I think it would probably bring the temperature down.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
But I don't like it. In fact, I'm completely against this policy, but I can see the practical reasons as to why the police are doing it at the same time.
Yeah, because the space that is created by the absence of information allows misinformation to flourish.
That is it.
But then what we saw in Epsom, this is why it's such an interesting story, what we saw in Epsom was when there genuinely is no information. There is genuinely no information. That also creates a vacuum into which the racist liars can move.
And they take advantage of the situation and bring in more misinformation, I think, is as you mentioned.
Yeah, and so is it a good thing or a bad thing to do this? And I still think, on reflection, it might be a good thing, but for very, very bad reasons, because there are people who are genuinely more concerned or profess to be much more upset about any crime, particularly these types of crime, when they are committed by people of one background and not as outraged or upset or as hurt when they are committed by people of other backgrounds. 12:42 is the time, very nearly. Aggie Chambray joining us in the next part of the programme to look back on the speech that Keir Starmer has given today, which some of you clearly were listening to when you should have been listening to me, because it appears to have been quite warmly received in some quarters, but we will soon see. Neil is in Rushcliffe. Neil, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think the policy, unfortunately, is probably potentially the worst of all worlds. My recollection is that it was introduced almost as a sort of knee-jerk response in response to South Porter around that time. And although you could argue, as you say, it's finally balanced between is it going to decrease or increase tensions, and I think the answer there is probably sometimes it could decrease and sometimes it could potentially increase. The underlying issue, though, I think, unfortunately, is that because the government doesn't share information through a matter of policy and a matter of the way, I guess, that we do politics on these sorts of areas that people are concerned about. And when I say people, I'm not just talking about, if you like, a relatively small number of out-and-out racists who, as you say, will take any opportunity to highlight this. Mm. But people, myself included, and, you know, I'm a relatively educated person, are concerned about what crime, I guess, actually looks like in all its forms in the country. And in periods like we've had, where there has been a lot of societal change over a relatively short period of time, I think there are probably quite a lot of people who would like to know with some certainty what that means in terms of crime and whether there are any particular issues associated with particular groups, situations, so demographics, whatever.
You're concerned that ethnicity could be a predictor of criminality?
No, I don't think it could be a predictor, but I do think that if we are not willing to have a look at the influencing factors, underlying root causes associated with things, then we're doing ourselves a disservice.
Root causes like what, Neil?
Well, as you're looking at, for instance, current examples, obviously there was another fairly high-profile example last week where three asylum seekers who'd arrived on small boats were convicted and went to prison in relation to a group rape in Brighton.
Yes.
Now, what we don't know, myself included, is that somehow representative of any particular sort of trends, ways
of
thinking?
But you know their ethnicity and their asylum status.
Yes, but what I don't know is whether for the group as a whole, if you like, or the areas these guys have come from, or their age groups, or their particular belief systems or cultural backgrounds, whether those things are influencing
factors. And how would you find that out?
By the government being open and honest and willing to
accept. But it was. You know where these people came, where these gross individuals came from, and you know what they did. So the information you want has been provided to you.
But is there a higher incidence, if you like, of rapes carried out by people from those backgrounds who fit into that category? I don't know the answer to that question, do you?
Well, I've got the answer in front of me on some elements of this. When the Home Office reveals the arrest rate for every 1,000 people by ethnicity, and then you have the arrest rate and the total number of arrests by ethnicity as well, so you can run through Asian, Bangladeshi, Chinese, Indian, Pakistani, Asian, other, black African, black Caribbean, mixed white and Asian, mixed white and black. I mean, I could go on. The statistics, I'm sure, could be more detailed, but the information of anybody convicted and I mean, you could do this yourself, couldn't you? You could just tot it all up and count.
Well, no, not really.
Why
because,
not?
Well, because as you know, statistics, you know, depending on how you select them and how they're used and who's using them, can end up with a more clouded picture. What
so
I'd
you don't
like
want
is,
statistics?
No, then. I do want statistics, but I want some.
So what statistics do you want?
Well, for instance, you've just told, not told me, but as I understand it, if you look at the Brighton incident, two of the guys came on the same boat, I think. Is that right?
Well,
you will know.
I don't know for certain, but what would you learn from that fact that they did, that being on that boat was a predictor of a certain type of criminality?
Well, if you, for instance, took statistics and you said how many people were on that boat, and let's say for the sake of argument it was 100,
yeah.
Let's take 100 people in the country at the same time and let's work out how many of those people have subsequently been involved in a gang rape in Brighton.
And what do we learn from that?
What we might learn from that is whether there are any predisposing factors, if you like, or things that may
being
be feeding into some of these things.
Couldn't
no,
be
not
a
being in a boat. I'm putting the point back to you about statistics. You can take statistics unless you can agree, if you like, on how you use them in different ways. So I'm saying, well, of that group of 100 people who arrived on that day on that boat,
yes,
let's take an equal group of 100 people who were already here.
So two out of 100. Yes, and so what you want to do is arrive at conclusions about the other 98 people on that boat who haven't committed any crimes.
No, not at all.
Well, what then? So what do you gain from the knowledge, I mean, which in this case, clearly you already have, but you somehow feel you should have more of? What do you gain from that knowledge? Your example, there's 100 people on a boat, two of them are rapists. What does that knowledge give us that you can use helpfully?
Well, part of the knowledge that it might give us is, are we, in effect, having larger numbers of people in the country who have a different way of looking at...
But what about the 98 people on the boat that haven't committed a crime? What do we learn about them?
Well, we learn that they are potentially law-abiding citizens. I'm not suggesting...
But we know all this already. We've got all this information.
I don't think we have, James. I think you're dodging the issue.
What's the issue I'm dodging now?
The issue you're dodging is that the government and politicians are so wary of discussing these sorts of issues that they're unwilling
to... What sorts of issues? The rapists in Brighton were asylum seekers. That was announced. It was reported everywhere. It's not something you could keep secret. What we're discussing is a story where people who probably want the sort of statistics and information that you're referring to were able to claim that they were being lied to or misled because there wasn't any information that the police could reveal. So how would our world improve? I mean, because you'll understand that to some people you sound like you're calling for statistics that you agree with to be released, but I'm not even clear on what those statistics are. How would our world be improved by
statistics.
Is it skin colour?
No,
or is it just asylum status?
How can it be as simple as skin colour or just asylum status?
Well, I don't know what you're asking for that isn't already available.
I'm asking for an honest and open breakdown of statistics that would give us some insight into whether we have got additional crime-related issues in the country as a result of the fact that we now have a lot more people in the country who
weren't
here
previously.
Well,
I'm sure we do. I mean, any population.
So is that... So
an
is
increase
that,
in people. I mean, do you worry about the...
Is that a problem at all?
Do you worry
James,
about
that,
the birth rate?
Is that a problem at all from your point of view?
I mean, it's a great refrain of mine that every single community in our country creates criminals and creates criminality. So if you increase the number of Capricorns in the country, there'll be more Capricorn criminals. If you increase the number of men from Rushcliffe, there'll be more criminals from Rushcliffe because it's a percentage of a population. I think what you want is to know whether or not the percentage of asylum seekers committing a certain type of crime is higher than the percentage of people from other backgrounds, whether there is a proclivity to commit a crime defined by your asylum status, which brings me back to the original question I asked, which is what do we do with that information with regard to the massive, massive, massive majority of people in that category who are not criminals? The 98% of people on the boat of your imaginings that are not rapists. How do we use the information about the minority of two to deal differently with the innocent 98?
Well, we have an open and honest discussion that we never
We're having
have
an open
it.
And honest discussion. I'm asking you to answer my question.
Okay, well...
What do we do with the information about the guilty in our dealings with the innocent?
Okay, well, let's extrapolate it out a bit now.
No, just answer the question, because I'm already late for the break. What do we do with the information about the guilty in our dealings with the innocent?
What you do, James, is you actually face up to some of the facts, which is...
I know, an open and honest conversation, face up to the facts, but what do we actually do? There's 98 innocent people here who shared a boat with two rapists. How do we treat them differently from how we're currently treating them?
Are you going to let me answer the question?
Yes, please.
Right. Well, let's for the sake of argument, extrapolate it out. Let's times the number of boats.
You're not answering the question.
I am answering the question,
but
you want to jump in and stop me answering it.
No, I don't. What are we going to do with those 98
because
people differently
I'm
from
not,
what we're doing now?
If you let me answer the question, I will explain.
If you start answering the question, I'll let you answer it.
If you extrapolate those figures out...
Yeah.
Okay, let's suppose there's going to be 100 rapes for every 200,000 people.
Why are we doing? Why are we doing this? We're talking about your original example of 98 innocent people. We find out that there's two rapists on a boat that they came across on. How do we treat those 98 people differently? Why won't you just answer the question?
James, you're very good at haranguing people, but...
You're very good at saying extrapolate, but how do we treat... You want to treat innocent people differently because of a shared characteristic with guilty people?
No, I don't. For the record, no, I don't.
Okay.
And for the record,
so then why do you want the statistics then?
Point.
Make your point then.
For anyone listening to this logically, this is why people never phone in to try and have a conversation with you, James, because you will...
But here you are, phoning in to have a conversation with me.
Yes, because I hope that occasionally you might be willing to listen to...
Well, go on then. How are we going to treat those 98 people differently from how we do now?
Can I have 1 minute to explain without you interrupting me?
Very late for the break, but go on, speak quickly. Okay, and don't say extrapolate.
I'll ring off and leave other people to make...
No, you crack on. I'll give you a minute.
Right. Well, what I was trying to explain was that if, for the sake of argument, for every boat of 100 people that arrive, there will be two people who are more likely to commit rapes, if you extrapolate that out to a number of boats and you get to a decision point where you say, well, okay, for 100,000 people arriving, there's going to be 100 extra rapes, is that an acceptable risk or not? That's the sort of conversation I'm saying the government should be having.
And how do you know that somebody is more likely to be a rapist because they were on a boat?
It's not about being on a boat, is it? It's about cultural background. It's
right.
About where people come from. It's all the factors that you will never, ever even admit to discussing or to even entertain the could be a discussion
Are we not discussing it now?
Yes, we are, but only on a superficial level.
Okay. I'm sorry you feel it was a superficial conversation. I look forward to talking to you again when either we have a little bit more time or we've got a slightly clearer understanding of what it is that we're actually discussing. But in the meantime, lots of people rioting in Epsom because they weren't given information that existed, because it didn't exist. And questions of whether or not the authorities should be doing something differently persist. Thank you, Neil. I look forward to our next conversation when we can do a lot more extrapolating. It's 12:53.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Donald Trump has certainly been a victim of political violence, but is he currently its main cause? He says King Charles will be safe in the US today. And Keir Starmer tackles the shop thieves.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
Everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Your time is valuable. Your perspective should be too. The Economist cuts through the noise with the stories that truly shape your world.
How can you believe that a new regime won't crush you just like the previous one?
Online scams are stranger than they've ever been.
When the world's turned upside down, know which way is up. Read, watch, or listen to The Economist.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Forget that.
Keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress.
MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:56 is the time. A very curtailed slot for Aggie Chambray because I do dislike being accused of not letting people speak. But unfortunately, I'm not going to let you speak as much as I should have done. So I'll be quiet and you can tell us what Keir Starmer has been talking about this morning.
Well, James, Keir Starmer has been at an Usdaw conference. He's been making a speech to the Union of Shop Distributor and Allied Workers this morning. And really what he wanted to do was reiterate again and again that he is on the side of working people. He talked about retail theft. He talked about employment rights, perhaps unsurprising because of who he was talking about, and really wanted to, which actually I think he doesn't do enough of, talked about what this government, he says, has done, talked about sick pay from day one, talked about paternity leave from day one, talked about fire and rehire being scrapped. And he talked about the fact that they have just scrapped regulation where shoplifters stealing goods worth less than £200 would not be properly held to account. He said, we've scrapped this ridiculous regulation. He said, we are calling time on the free-for-all, standing firm together against the disgraceful crime of shop theft. And he also said he wasn't blind to how big a challenge it was, and talked about the fact that the number of people charged has gone up by 17% in the last statistics, and said shop theft is down, but only slightly. But he said the tide could be turning. And in this speech, he also made it personal. He talked about a care worker who worked very long hours year after year.
Some care workers didn't have sick pay. So if they were sick, they had to stay at home and simply not get paid at all in the pandemic. As we were all clapping them, recognising what they were doing for our country. Well, delegates, that care worker is my sister. And every day I ask myself, does Britain work for her? Does Britain work for people like my late brother? I had a life touched by opportunity. I grew up working class, and I've been lucky. But Nick, my brother, he had difficulties learning and spent his entire adult life going from one job to the next. Does Britain work for people like him? Because there are millions of people like that. People who've been ignored by politics for years. People who don't get the dignity and the respect that they deserve. And who don't get the opportunity to go as far as their talent and effort would take them. So yes, I know whose side I'm on.
Keir Starmer there talking about his sister and his late brother who died on Boxing Day in 2024. And just one more thought from that speech was he did say at the end, he talked about the fact that he would fight for working people with every breath he has. And I just thought that language was interesting, talking about fighting with every breath he has, yeah, considering that pressure that he's under from his own party and also opposition parties too.
He's not, I mean, all of the talk about him making an announcement that he will step down at some later date or facing rebellion from within the ranks. He gave an interview to a paper this weekend as well when he talked about his intention to lead the Labour Party into the next election. He's not getting the same memos that some of the politicians speaking to some of the journalists are getting.
No, indeed. I mean, he said, as you say, over the weekend, he's going nowhere. He believes he can win the next election, and also said that the vast majority of the parliamentary Labour Party is loyal, and that felt like, you know, fighting back in that speech, yeah, this morning. But there is a huge amount of unhappiness in his party.
Indeed there is. Aggie Chambray, thank you very much indeed. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app, or indeed the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download it for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At 3 today, he may have his own woes, the Prime Minister, but he said this morning that he thinks the tide is turning against the shop thieves. I'm not so sure. We'll talk about that at 3 anyway. At 2, the King meets the President today in Washington, hot on the heels of the attempted assassination of basically the Trump administration. What's the best we can hope for from this visit of King Charles to Washington? The events over the weekend in Washington are still very fresh in our minds, aren't they? Political violence isn't anything new in America, but it does seem to stalk President Trump. He's a victim of it, for sure. But is he also a cause?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Britain's ambassador to the US says all appropriate security measures are in place for the King and Queen's state visit. Buckingham Palace says the trip is going ahead as planned from this evening, following the shooting at the White House correspondents' dinner. Royal commentator Sarah Hewson's told LBC President Trump respects the King.
The King has an ability to be the Trump whisperer, if you like, and that is why he's being deployed. This is soft power at its finest. You remember Keir Starmer when he brandished that invitation in the Oval Office at the White House for the President? That really was his Trump card, and that's what they're pulling out at the moment at this point of pretty rock-bottom relations between the UK and the US, far from a special relationship.
Sir Keir Starmer says the Bank of England will join an emergency meeting tomorrow to discuss the impact of the war in Iran.
What Iran shows is that once again, events happening miles away from Britain have the capacity to hurt our living standards, our future and our security.
He warned the economic consequences of the conflicts could be felt for some time, with a key trading route effectively closed. Lebanon's health ministry says 14 people were killed in Israeli airstrikes yesterday. Sir Keir was speaking at a conference for the Usdaw Shopworkers Union. He told them the tide could be turning against shoplifting. Recorded shoplifting offences fell slightly last year to 509,000. It comes as the centre-right Centre for Social Justice reports the average number of offences committed by each shoplifter has nearly doubled in 5 years. Northern Ireland's government says it's absolutely united in condemning a car bomb attack at a police station in West Belfast. No one was hurt after a delivery driver was forced at gunpoint to drive to the site in Dunmurry, where the device exploded on Saturday. Here's Chief Constable John Boucher.
There is no place for these mindless thugs, these idiots, who think it's acceptable to carry out such stupid attacks.
And drummers and a giant puppet have gathered outside the High Court in London for a major pollution case. Welsh Water and a chicken producer deny damaging the quality of the Wye in South Wales and Herefordshire. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 26 points at 10.405. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny for many, but showers mixed in, particularly for the north of the UK. Those showers moving into the Midlands and east this evening. Highs of 11 to 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. If you're just joining us a little later in the programme, we'll reflect on, reflections on what the King's visit to Washington might pan out like. It seems to be a fairly well-controlled sort of set of events. There'll be no sort of live Oval Office event, that kind of thing. So we'll see. We'll talk about that a little later on, and obviously with LBC throughout the day, we'll reflect on events as soon as that visit starts in earnest today between the King and the President. But the events of Saturday night into Sunday morning, of that attempt to essentially assassinate some, if not all, of the US cabinet, and obviously Donald Trump would have been in the potential shooter's sights in that instance. It was such a shocking series of events to watch, not least because I had some friends in that room, journalists, former colleagues of mine at the BBC. And you really, you know, your mind does go to what could have happened. Thankfully, just one shooting, not fatal, of a Secret Service agent. But it could have been horrendous had he got through those doors. And the whole thing reminded me a little of, or brought to mind, rather than reminded me, or brought to mind the shock of the Brighton bombings all those years ago, back in 1984, I think I've got that right. Again, an attempt to kill the cabinet, to murder the cabinet, which is partly successful. Certainly members of the government were killed. The sheer affront that is to democracy, and the attempt on President Trump was an affront on democracy as well, let alone the dangers it would have posed to him and others, so many others in that room, had the attempted assassin got in. But you can't help looking at the third attempt on the president's life, or certainly the third public attempt on the president's life, there may have been plots foiled for all we know, without also concluding, or asking, I have concluded, by the way, I'm asking you a question, I'll tell you my conclusion to it, that Donald Trump has himself contributed to an atmosphere of violence in his country, to an atmosphere of political violence in his country. I'll tell you why, and I'll elaborate on that in a minute. But let's just take a listen to the president yesterday being interviewed by CBS anchor Nora O'Donnell. He snapped at her when she read out the White House correspondent dinner shooter's alleged manifesto during a 60 Minutes interview. Take a listen.
The so-called manifesto is a stunning thing to read, Mr. President. He appears to reference a motive in it. He writes this, quote, administration officials, they are targets. And he also wrote this, I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. What's your reaction
to
that?
Well, I was waiting for you to read that because I knew you would, because you're horrible people, horrible people. Yeah, he did write that. I'm not a rapist. I didn't rape anybody.
You think he was referring to you?
Excuse me. I'm not a pedophile. You read that crap from some sick person. I got associated with all stuff that has nothing to do with me. I was totally exonerated. Your friends on the other side of the plate are the ones that were involved with, let's say, Epstein or other things. But I said to myself, you know, I'll do this interview and they'll probably, I read the manifesto, you know, he's a sick person, but you should be ashamed of yourself reading that, because I'm not any of those things.
Mr. President,
and I was never,
excuse me.
Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be reading that on 60 Minutes. You're a disgrace. But go ahead. Let's finish the interview.
The other thing that he wrote in
you're
the
disgraceful.
Well, he was taught in his so-called manifesto.